you remember this album?
No, I was too young. But every time that that starts, I always think it's going to say, Happy Halloween. Every single time. I don't know why, but...
The NSYNC Christmas album is one of my favorite things. Mm. That's track three. Or maybe six. It's definitely something divisible by three. And it's so good.
Is that your favorite, like, non-traditional Christmas album? You know, like, or like one by a pop artist?
I would say one by a pop artist. Yes. Yes. Okay. I really do like Taylor Swift's album, but she just does like cutesy country versions because she made it so long ago. It is very cute. However, as you know, producer and I have an ongoing fight about Michael Bublé Michael and Bublé. Josh Groban, if you guys remember from last year.
But I think John Legend trumps them both with his Christmas album.
His is probably good.
I'm very into it. There's one song that is slamming. Mm. Casey and I just like put it on the car sometimes and like really jam out, even if it's not Christmas.
I'm into Pentatonix too when it's not Christmas. I love their music. Mm-hmm. But we're not here to talk about holiday music.
No, we're just here to talk about things surrounding this holiday.
Merry Christmas.
Of Yuletide Christmas. Happy Christmas.
It's Wednesday. You're getting us on a Wednesday.
Which is weird. We don't know what we're doing here on this day.
Yeah, we couldn't wait to get this episode out to you. And we didn't want you to have to wait till the day after Christmas. That would be rude. Yeah.
And then things wouldn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And you're probably annoyed with your family. And you don't want to listen to us. So this is your Christmas present.
Right.
Or you can wait until the next day when you're driving home from said family get together.
Yeah.
I don't know. But... we're here with you. So happy Christmas.
That wonderful, wonderful happy day.
Mm.
This is the penultimate episode of 2019.
Yes, of this podcast you're listening to called Herstory.
On the Rocks.
With Katie.
And Allie.
And tonight on this special Yuletide episode, we're still going to be doing the same fucking thing we always do.
Same thing.
We are going to drink two cocktails.
Tell you some stories.
A story.
But we're not historians.
God, no.
And we try to get very drunk.
Yes.
Christmas, some Christmas Yuletide merriment, one might say. And we do all of our research, all in sources that you could find.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
We're combining all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm nervous about mine tonight because even the History Chicks only had a 12-minute episode on her.
That's okay.
12 minutes. I had to like really pull some strings to make this one happen.
But that's all right. Cause mine is a funny story. Cause it's just like one big story.
Yeah.
And then I kind of go into the life of one person, but.
Oh, and that's what we're doing. We tell stories.
We talk about women from history.
Good women, bad women, real women, fake women.
Groups of women.
All different types of women doing all different types of things so that we can bring to you a little bit more because there aren't enough resources about all of these women that exist.
Very true.
And we're adding to the stockpile.
So do you want to do presents?
Let's do presents.
Before we get into stuff?
I don't want to wait until after the birthday cake.
Yeah,
presents. That's
absolutely
no fun. Mine go together.
Okay.
This is for you and fiance this holiday season. It's kind of like Buffalo Check wrapping paper that Katie's going through right now. And they're two Christmassy wine glasses.
Those
what do they say?
So cute. Holiday cheer. Thank you.
Yeah.
I love wine glasses and I don't have enough. And I love stemless wine glasses.
And seasonal ones.
Absolutely.
Because then they become special.
Yes. Absolutely.
And this goes with it in a special wrapping. Look at that hot mama.
Oh my God. I love a good wine bottle.
Oh yeah.
And this one is beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
Liza helped me pick it out.
Well, she's got really good taste.
She does. I was like, look for one with a cute lady on it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I also love this cute little box. Do you want it back to give other people wine?
No, you can use it.
Okay.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Okay, so you have to open the smaller one on top first.
Okay, smaller one first. Mm-hmm. I'm ready. It feels like a book.
Uh-huh. It is a book.
Katie's wrapping paper is much more posh than mine. Would you call it posh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ooh, it's a book. Morning, night, little pep talks from me and you.
By your fave.
Me and you.
By Lin-Manuel
Miranda.
And so I picked out one page. So you read the one in the morning and then the other one at night. And I thought that was perfect for you.
Okay, ready? Good morning. You are stunning. Use your power wisely. good night. You are stunning. Lay down your burdens. I love it. And the little page, it has like little like masks cut out, like a actor mask.
Every page has these adorable drawings, and the book is just so cute. And some little poems are longer than others, and it's just something to read in the morning and something to read at night. Just little pep talks. And I just think that it's so great. And it's by your fave.
I'm in love with that.
And this one. So before you open it, do you remember my New Year's resolution?
Your New Year's resolution was to make better decisions. Listen to yourself.
Yes. To listen to yourself. My own advice. So the first piece of advice I gave myself this year was to be more like you, because I look up to you. So I have been working on this all year. I knew I could only be 10% like you. So this is something I've been working on all year.
You're bonkers.
I ran 219 miles this year.
No, you didn't.
Secretly.
How did you do that?
And then there's a picture of us at the first race we ever ran together.
Look how young you look.
I know.
That is adorable. We'll have to put a picture of this up.
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to cry. That's so sweet.
So I've been tracking it. Some months were slower than others. But
when did you finish?
The 13th.
Oh, wow.
Like days ago.
I've got 34 miles
Friday. Well, hopefully this will push you to finishing it.
Oh, and then we can put the pictures up together.
Exactly.
Oh, so fun.
So that was something I knew that I wanted to do for you and for myself.
Oh, but great. This is so personal. I'm like, drink more.
No, yours was great.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Love it. All right.
Okay, so now that we're done presents,
we gotta get to work.
We have to get to work.
Work, work, work.
So, but because we are an audio form podcast, we are going to describe what these women look like, because mm-hmm. we don't want you stopping and Googling and crashing your car.
Mm-mm.
So we need to get a little physical, physical. Allie, what does your lady look like tonight?
I am doing the amazing Mrs. Claus. She is typically depicted as a woman in her 60s to her 80s. She's a bit heavy set or plump with rosy cheeks. She's always wearing either red and white or green plaid. Mm. And her clothes are like warm. They include fur, but mm-hmm. they're always like functional. She could use them in the kitchen, mm-hmm. including like a white apron, usually over top of what she's wearing. Mm-hmm. Her hair is white, but when she's pictured as younger, her hair's red.
Huh.
In most cartoons and pictures. And she has glasses and a bun.
Cute.
And that's Mrs. Claus.
So I am doing Anne Daniels in the 1997 all-female North Pole relay expedition.
Well, do
so,
it.
Because it's a group of 20 women and two guides. I'm just going to say these are all just your average white British women.
Got it.
They are middle age, like to younger. So the youngest was like 25 and the oldest was it like 48 or something like that. But most importantly, they are just regular women. So get that in your head.
Right.
In most pictures, they can be seen in heavy orange snow gear, goggles, boots, and frost on any bit of exposed skin. But I'm going to give a little more focus onto Anne Daniels, who is a white middle-aged British woman with short blonde hair, a petite figure, and blue eyes. So she's going to be kind of the focal point of specifically the later half of the story. But that's what they look like.
Anne Daniels.
Anne Daniels.
That's a fun name.
And the North Pole Relay.
I love
women.
It.
So,
are you ready to find out what you're drinking?
I am. This looks delicious.
Super traditional drink.
Mm-hmm.
It is Mrs. Claus's eggnog. Now, if you wanted to be ballsy and make eggnog by yourself, you would need egg yolks, sugar, salt, vanilla extract, nutmeg, heavy cream, whole milk, and cinnamon. But I just bought the store half gallon because I am not that brave. And it is three parts brandy and one part rum. And I sprinkled on top cinnamon, and then I put down some really broken pieces of candy cane down into the glass so they would slowly melt and like infuse mm-hmm. into the eggnog, and then we have like a little candy cane straw.
Excellent.
Sticking out the edge.
Cheers.
Cheers. Mm. Oh
my God, I love eggnog.
I know you do.
So much.
Katie eats eggnog with ice cream in it.
Well, because my dad, when we were kids, he would, like, when they had, like, more traditional Christmas Eve, before we all started drinking, he would make eggnog and he would mix eggnog ice cream and blend it with the rum.
So it's like a
and
milkshake.
The brandy. So yeah. It was like an boozy eggnog milkshake, and it always looked so good. And also, I put milk in my ice cream anyways, yeah. So it's just even better. But God, I also feel like making eggnog at home is like making mayonnaise at home. It's like, yeah, you could, but should you?
Yeah, but why?
But why?
Let's all not.
Yeah. Let's all nog.
There you go. That's a little Christmas joke for you. What do you know about Mrs. Claus?
All right. I know she's the lady of the house.
Mm-hmm.
She gets Mr. Claus ready.
Oh, yeah.
She fattens him up if sure he's does. Not doing his duty.
Sure does.
Not doing his due diligence to beef up before the big night.
Yeah.
All I remember is her and Rudolph, and she's like, you're too skinny.
Nobody likes a skinny Santa.
Exactly.
Yeah, I watched a lot of Miss Claus this week.
Which is good, because that's what I would want to be doing anyways this week.
Yeah.
I just, right before I came here, to get into the Christmas spirit, I watched the Mickey's Christmas Carol.
So fun.
I love that one.
Who's a better Bob Cratchit, Mickey or Kermit?
I'm going to say Mickey.
Okay.
I feel like a lot of people disagree with me, but I just love that one so much. And I love that the Wind in the Willows folks are there, because oh, yeah. I feel like a lot of kids this day would not know who they were.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But yeah. And then I went like an old Mickey Mouse binge after that.
You got to sometimes. And then you got here where my kids were still awake and oh, all yeah. your spirit just
it
got
just
knocked out of you.
Knocked out of me like a bat out of hell.
Yeah. They're crazy.
but yeah, but that's all I know about Mrs. Claus is that she's Santa's wife and she feeds him lots of food.
Well, you know what? Close the book. Because, I mean, Mrs. Claus is pretty incredible. Mm-hmm. And modern Christmas lore is enough to fill novels and our brains with useless information. So before we get started, okay. I'm giving you a 6-question useless information Ooh. Christmas quiz.
I'm ready.
Okay. What would you be riding if you were dashing through the snow?
In a one-horse open sleigh?
Yeah, you oh would be God. In a one-horse open sleigh. If you were to celebrate Cindy Lou Who's birthday, you would Ooh. Know that she's no more than...
2?
Yeah. Cindy Lou Who.
Like, I think they're all
going to
be
two.
Rhymes. I don't know.
A lot of them are. If you were a horrible man pressuring me for sex and I said, I really can't stay, what would you say?
But it's cold outside. Also, I'm going to start defending that song again. It was cute for the time, and I think it's all about, I read this thing about this English teacher who posted about how that was about women's empowerment. It does sound bad, but if she's, I think she's being coy in the song. I think she's being coy. She wants to stay.
I think you could read it a couple ways.
You could read it a couple ways. You could read it a couple ways, but I'm coming back around to that song.
Oh, it is. Well, I do really like the song.
Yeah.
Because it's fun.
Yeah.
But you could definitely read it as horrible.
You could definitely read it as horrible.
Okay.
That's why I'm glad that John Legend and Kelly Clarkson did the other version.
Right.
So now we have two. Whatever floats your boat.
We're all okay with it. On the second day of Christmas, what did my true love gift me?
2 French hens. No, nope. 3 French hens. 3 French hens. 2 turtle doves.
2 turtle doves is what I have. Okay. If you were a wise man and I was Jesus, what would you give me?
Frankincense, myrrh, and gold.
Wrong. Essential oils
Damn.
Would be the answer. Which is just frankincense. Okay. And last one. If you were left at home on Christmas and a burglar was trying to break into your house, mm-hmm. what NBA mm-hmm. player would you put on a train to go around your living room?
MJ.
MJ.
Michael Jordan.
Number 23.
Bulls.
So there we go. That's how much useless Christmas knowledge yep. we all have in our heads.
Excellent.
And I wanted to point that out because we know almost nothing about Miss Claus. I was shocked at how little information there was about
really?
Her. Yes. Even like most references just list the movies and TV shows that have featured her. There is not like Christmas lore, which is really intense. So I'm going to try to spell it out as best I can.
Okay.
As we know, Well, first, if you for some god awful reason let your children listen to this podcast, preview ahead. I'm not going to try to do any spoilsies, but just in case, mm-hmm. you never know, on the Santa detail. But first, we know that Santa was a bishop from modern-day Turkey, St. Nicholas of Myra, and he was born in 270 and died in 343 AD. It was not impossible at this time for a Turkish monk to have a wife. What? So, like, modern-day priests and monks don't get married, but like back then, not everybody was celibate, so he could have had a wife, but there's no record of Saint Nicholas ever being married. Saint Nicholas in his life would secretly pay the dowries of poor girls in town so that they could get married.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
That's really
and
nice.
Then he would leave like anonymous treats for poor kids. And that came into like leaving your shoes out on your doorstep on December 5th for the 6th, which is Saint Nicholas Day. Mm-hmm. By the time this moved to the Netherlands, though, he was called Sinterklaas, which is like a rough translation of Saint Nicholas, and said with kind of an accent over years. And then the Dutch are the ones that brought the Christmas tradition to New York mm-hmm. when they came across the Atlantic. When Santa came to the United States, he was still a bachelor. No Mrs. Whoa. Claus yet. They've been married for less than 250 years. Can you believe it?
Also, one thing I'm thinking of is, do you remember when they had that pregnant Barbie and it was like, it was like pure mayhem that was like a pregnant Barbie and she didn't come with a Ken. Like
she can't be by herself.
A single mother. And it's like, I wonder if like almost like a similar thing of like, we can't have just him being single
yeah.
with all these children.
Father sold like, separately.
Father sold separately.
I think that that was part of it, that everybody just expected people in a leadership role, especially if they have this affinity for children or have to spend a lot of time with children, to have a spouse.
Yeah.
Because we've seen what's happened with non-spoused Catholic church priests, right? Mm-hmm. Like there is that stigma mm-hmm. that also is true. So Santa, even in the poem The Night Before Christmas, he was still single. No Mrs. Claus in It Was the Night Before
right.
Christmas went all through the house. But he did get his famous reindeer in this play, which means they are, or poem, which means they are pets that he brought to the wedding. Those reindeer are like the pet, you know how like when you meet somebody and you're like, yeah, but your dog hates me. It was like that. Those reindeer were part of the deal with him. The first time we get to see Miss Claus was in 1849, and it's in a bit of a morality tale by James Reese called A Christmas Legend, and it is a huge fucking downer. This story, like, there's this super poor family, and they couldn't care for their sick daughter, and she dies. And then Santa and his wife show up and bring the family some gifts, and they're, like, really kind to these two old strangers, and in the morning, it's revealed that it's not actually Santa and Mrs. Claus, but, like, a reincarnation of their daughter and her old boyfriend. It's very, very weird. But the point that people make with this story is the very casual mention of and his wife.
Okay.
So it implies that it was common knowledge that Santa had a wife, but this was the first time it was written down.
Okay.
So it was very, no description, just and his wife, Mrs. Claus, you know. So that's 1849. From this point forward, she's mentioned in songs, stories, and poems. In 1851, she does have her initials listed at the bottom of a letter as A, B. So, Katie, I have something I need to tell you. I am Mrs. Claus. Now you know.
I also can't believe her initials. So are they ABC?
I have no idea because
like
we don't know her name.
Annette Benning Claus.
Maybe. And that's a perfect point to this. We have to add that we don't know her name. She has never been given a first name.
That's
so
very upsetting.
It is. She has been Jessica, Anna, Margaret, Martha, Carol, Samantha, Lydia, Annalena, Ahoop, Siki, and Mary, M-E-R-R-Y.
That's
but
cute.
Never anything else. And like Mrs. Claus reminded me of, remember when I went to Plymouth Rock and like I took a picture of the pilgrim gravestone and it was just like Mr. Corey and his wife buried here. So-and-so and his wife. I feel like that's how Mrs. Claus is. And it kind of sucks.
It does suck.
However, the Charlie Brown Peanuts in the 60s, they're the ones who gave her the name Mary, like Merry Christmas, which also happens in Dumb and Dumber, right? So you're saying there's a chance. But the little girl, Charlie Brown's sister, in a letter says that she congratulates her for keeping her last name, as if her name is Merry Christmas and his name is Santa Claus.
So I just forgot about that part.
Isn't that cute?
I loved that Charlie Brown Christmas special, because that one was the one without the tree, because the famous one is the one where he gets the tree.
Yes.
This is the one where they have the Christmas carol, and it's so cute.
Hark! Exactly.
Man, I love that one.
It's great. And it was just fun to think that in the 60s, they were starting to push for this. Why doesn't anybody know anything about Miss Claus?
Right.
Like, who is she? So in 1862, Harper's Magazine gave her a look. They had a picture and they listed that she had a dozen red petticoats that had been made like Superman. You open the closet, it's like
I thought you meant like on at once. I was like, that's crazy.
No, that is bonkers. Although those women who go to the North Pole, I'm sure they wore a lot, like 12 coats at once. And the petticoat was made famous by Queen Victoria and her family, but Mrs. Claus's was made of red flannel, and it was worn slightly shorter than a typical skirt so she could walk in the snow and ice skate. Mm. And it wasn't until over 10 years later when she was decked out in green plaid. Mm-hmm. So she wore red for over a decade before she was allowed into the green palette. In Lil's Travels in Santa Claus Land, we actually get to see her do something for the first time. This is 1879, and they refer to a lady sitting behind a golden desk writing in a large book. And you have Santa Claus over on the other side of the room, and he's looking out of this, like, telescope, and he puts his ear to the telescope, and then he turns around and says, "Put a good mark for Sarah Buttermilk. I see she's trying to conquer her quick temper."
Oh, that's cute.
That's adorable. And then it's her job to sit there and make the notes, which implies that Mrs. Claus is responsible for the naughty and nice list.
That makes me happy that Sarah Buttermilk got on the nice list for trying. Yeah. I think that is a little note of encouragement to everyone out there.
God bless you, Sarah Buttermilk.
And everyone.
And may the force be with you. So this was common at that time for tradesmen wives to keep their books. So it would make sense that a woman would be sitting, keeping all of the like financial books in order while her husband was doing the actual, you know, making and marketing of items. Mm-hmm. So it seems like her role's fitting pretty well into history. Then in Hickory Backlog, there's this character that's narrating, and he's an architect. The architect you can assume is a narrator. And this woman comes to him with complaints about hazards of contemporary kitchen design. And he mentions in his narrator brain, if this woman isn't Mrs. Claus, then I don't know who she is. Kind of like a Miracle on 34th Street kind of thing, where like she's bringing all these problems with kitchen design. And she starts going through her list, and he keeps trying to cut her off to speak. And each time she says, "Don't interrupt me," and keeps telling him the problems with his kitchen design. She's like, "You might have built the kitchen, but I use it and I know it better than you." Which is what I think female engineers excelled. If you look at like the first items that women created, it was like stuff for kitchens and stuff for washing machines and stuff for like baby carriages and like all the things that it's like, you know what would be a really fucking good idea?
Yeah.
If I could blah, blah, blah. And then they went and made it.
Because didn't your mom say something about that? It was like when you first had Caroline and What was it like? You're the
car carrier lifts out and you can bring it inside and put it in the high chair and you can take it and put it in the stroller without ever taking the baby out of it.
There we go.
So if they're asleep, you don't have to wake them up to get them inside, or you don't have to sit there in the car like staring at the sky while you wait for them to wake up.
Yeah.
And my mom was like, this is what happened once we got women engineers. And I was like, yes, Peggy.
Absolutely.
Preach, girl. So that was really cool that like they were showing. But still, Mrs. Claus in a kitchen role. Like, her job is to be in the kitchen. So a professor at Wesley, that should be on our bingo board.
Went to Wesley.
Yeah, at some point was involved in this Boston institution. So her name's Catherine Lee Bates, which Kathy what? Bates, right? Yeah. But this is at a totally different era. This is 1889. She wrote a play
Bates
called...
Bates is a vampire.
I know. That would make sense. Mm-hmm. They wrote a play called, or a poem, I keep calling them plays, called Goody Santa Claus and a Sleigh Ride. Now, goody was a Victorian word for Mrs. or wife. Oh. It meant like good wife. So I think the place I always hear it is in The Crucible. Like, the wife is goody so-and-so.
I was thinking of like Goody Two Shoes.
Mm.
Is that why people say that? Like...
Maybe, like Mrs. the woman. Oh, yeah. I've never thought about it like that.
Huh. I wonder.
Mm-hmm. Turn of phrase. Might be something. I don't know. But this woman, Catherine, your namesake, spelled the same, gave her, it's no A-B, but I'll give it to you. Gave her a attitude. And attitude. And she was just like up in Mr. Claus's business. So this is one of the things she says to him. You just sit here and grow chubby off of the goodies in my cubby from December to December till your white beard sweeps your knees. For you must allow, my goodman, that you're but a lazy woodman and rely on me to foster all your fruitful Christmas trees. Damn.
It also sounds like it's so veiled about sex.
Like, yes.
My goodies, which you're talking about. And then, like, all you want me to do is give you Christmas trees.
And you get lazy and grow fat. And then later on, she convinces him to take her on the sleigh ride. And later on, she says, why should you have all the glory of the joyous Christmas story when poor little goody Santa Claus has nothing but the work? I know the task takes brain dear, and I'm only supposed to hold your reindeer, and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. But she's like continually saying, like, I just want to have a part in this.
Yeah.
And he finally lets her go down and like fill some of the kids' stockings and come back up, which is really cool. But then later in this story, it turns out Miss Claus is also responsible for the rainbow chickens that lay Easter eggs. Not kidding.
I also almost said, like, that's ridiculous. Everyone knows the bunny lays the Easter eggs. And I was like, bunnies don't lay eggs.
Mrs. Claus, that's what she does in the off season. Rainbow chickens in the spring. She raises them just like she takes care of the reindeer. That's her job.
I love that.
She's really, really good at agriculture, apparently. So for the next 80 years, she kind of fades into the background and we don't hear a lot about her except for really the naughty nice list and that she kind of is an overseer of the elves, which were called the brownies at that time, which I don't know. And it turns into her being a representative of the cult of domesticity, right? She can darn things. She can feed cookies. She can do cocoa. She can make pie. She's a mother figure to the elves. She's kind of in charge of the books and production while Santa's away, but doesn't have a full-time job or even a title or a paycheck. She's just kind of the helper. And in the 1800s, the cult of domesticity was a term for an opinion about women. They believed that a woman should not do any work outside of the house. So there are four main beliefs. One, that women are more religious than men, piety. Two, that women are pure of heart, mind, and body, purity. Three, that women should answer to their husbands, submission. And four, women should stay at home. This was the belief in the 1800s, which is why it was so hard for women to get jobs and work later in life. And that is really the role that Mrs. Claus is playing. And I think we'll see throughout this story that she slowly plays a more and more important role as culture changes. At this time, almost always an accessory to Santa.
In the 1950s, though, we see her for the first time young, and she has kind of a corseted hourglass figure and red hair. And this keeps coming up over and over again. Sometimes people say it's because, like, red hair is the one that turns the most, like, white when you get older, so it would sense, yeah, that it would be super white hair as opposed to, like, grayish. But also, it's just kind of cute, like, the red suit, the red hair, like, it's that's fun. So Family Circus in 1961 did a thing called How Mrs. Santa Claus Saved Christmas. So Santa is sick and he slept through his alarm clock. So Mrs. Claus takes the sleigh and accidentally mixes up all the presents. But everyone ends up better off with the present that they got that wasn't intended for them in the first place. And for most of the 20th century, this is her story. She, without Santa knowing, is saving Christmas kind of behind his back, mm-hmm. kind of screwing things up, but then fixing it in the long run.
Yeah.
That's her. The whole tale of Mrs. Claus. Mm-hmm. An example from a little bit before this era, it says, here I sit year after year in Iceland dressing dolls and making candy bags and aprons and slippers and caps and whatnot. And when they're all done, Mr. Santa Claus just packs them in his sleigh and hitches his deer and away he goes to have all the fun and all the thanks. So you can see she's starting to get a little bitter and she wants to jump in the sleigh and do it herself. 1964. We're getting close. Mrs. Claus appears on film for the first time in what is regularly listed in the top 10 worst movies ever. Santa Conquers the Martians.
What? I've never heard of this.
Yep. You should go back, watch a couple clips from it on YouTube, everybody. Big, big old mess, but it is the first time that Mrs. Claus is ever depicted on television, only 3 weeks before Claymation Rudolph. Claymation Rudolph is the second time ever that Mrs. Claus is depicted in television. And as we said earlier, she's a big old meanie. She's yelling at her husband and force feeding him diabetes. And everybody's mean to Rudolph because he's weird and they don't like toys that are misfit. And the elves are bad singers. Like, the whole thing's a mess.
Everyone in that movie is terrible.
It's an example of bullying.
Yeah.
Full scale.
It really is.
Yeah.
And, like,
it's horrible.
That movie's ridiculous.
I mean, when you watch it and you, like, play a drinking game with it to be like, okay, every time they're awful to each other, take a drink. I know. Literally, Rudolph's father goes, I'm ashamed of you.
He's the worst character. Oh, my God.
Is it Donner? Is that who Donner, I think?
I think so. Yeah.
Well, Donner, you're a dick.
Oh, he really is. He's the absolute worst. Mm. I just, oh, my gosh. What is the little deer he has a crush on? Is it Clarice?
Clarice. She's got an 80-year-old woman singing voice. Absolutely. In the wilderness. I love it.
Oh, my gosh. Every character in that movie is so wild. Fucking Yukon Cornelius.
He's great. That was him falling off the mountain.
I love when he licks his pickaxe.
I'm going to be a dentist.
So weird.
I'm nothing a misfit. That's what I feel like the whole movie is.
Why am I such a misfit?
Correct. So then we get to see them a couple years later in another claymation pick. Santa Claus is coming to town where he plays Kris Kringle with his mailbag. And it's like a bummer of a place, gray town. And he meets a wonderful school teacher, which this becomes a trend that Miss Claus used to be a school teacher.
Huh.
And her name is Mrs. Jessica. And again, she has the hourglass figure and the red hair swept up in a bun. In 74, later in that decade, Santa takes a year off and she jumps in again. That's normal. And then we're jumping ahead because it just is normal for her to keep fixing his problems all through the 70s and 80s. So in 1996, Mrs. Santa Claus, played by Angela Lansbury, Mrs. Potts herself.
Oh my gosh.
Murder, she fucking wrote. I don't have any more references.
Oh my God.
Mary Poppins. No, she's not in Mary Poppins. No. She is in the new one with Lin-Manuel Miranda. So Angela Angela Lansbury is named Anna, and she gives her opinion to Santa about improving the efficiency of his machines in the factory, and she is completely ignored, and she goes on to prove that she has better ideas by figuring out his machines, but then she ends up like accidentally traveling through time in the sleigh and ends up in 1910 as a part of the women's suffragette movement.
What?
That happens. Mrs. Claus was part of the 1910 United States women's suffragette movement. Now we know.
Heard it. It's canon.
It's canon. Angela Lansbury played it. In 2002, Tim Allen needs to find a wife in the Santa Claus 2.
They should have stopped at the first one. Yo, my God.
The Santa Claus with an E.
That was such a good movie. They should have never made any more of those.
They shouldn't. The second one's bad. Third one kind of tries to bring it back. But in the second one, they're going to cancel Christmas if he doesn't get married.
That's ridiculous.
So ridiculous. That's what? Force-fed marriage.
I also appreciate it being flipped because I feel like that's what happened to Jasmine. She wasn't allowed to exist. I don't know. Run the kingdom. She wasn't.
Can't run the kingdom until you have a husband.
Yeah.
Exactly. The Simpsons have a Mrs. Claus, and it is voiced by Martha fucking Stewart.
Really?
I had to bring that up just because I think she's the perfect Mrs. Claus.
Love
I have
Stewart.
Nothing about that episode except for the fact that Martha Stewart was the voice. One of the most recent famous interpretations of Mrs. Claus was played by Professor Umbridge, Imelda Staunton.
Really?
Uh-huh. In 2011, in a movie called Arthur Christmas. Her first name, like I said, is Martha, and she has to deal with all the mom things. She has two kids. She's dealing with fighting relatives. She wraps her own present and hands it to Santa to give to her.
No.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
She's making food, and she's driving the Enterprise all by herself, and she's shown as a very, very efficient character. And this is where I want to bring up one trope of Miss Claus for us to discuss. I think it is a burden that women are supposed to complete all of the housework with zero thanks because that's their job, like quote unquote. And I read a really cool article earlier this week called I Don't Help My Wife. And it was about a guy who was sitting with his friends at the house, and he was like, oh, I'm going to put this stuff away real quick because they had just used some dishes. And the one guy was like, that's nice. I don't help my wife. And he was like, I don't help my wife either. This is our responsibility. Like, everybody says, I have to help my wife, but it's your fucking house, too.
Yeah.
I am flying off the roof with the F-bombs tonight, by the way. It is Christmas.
Well, because it's true. That is such a ridiculous term. It's kind of like it's on the same realm as like, oh, yeah, I got to babysit the kids tonight. And it's like they're your children. You literally are 50% of them.
Yeah.
Like, that's not babysitting.
Yeah. It implies that it is the wife's responsibility to do like 90% of the child rearing and the housework, and the extra 10%
it's like
is you
gift.
Helping.
It's a gift.
It's like you can put your husband on the chore chart.
Yeah, exactly.
Sticker.
I'm so glad that like Casey is not like that. Like I am like home more often, so I do more of it. But when it was flipped and he was home more often than I was, you know, just because our jobs have changed over the years, like he did the cooking and the cleaning. And you know what I'm saying? It just like shifts like that.
And it should, depending on like who's at the house and when they're at the house. And it's like if it's trash day and Jake's out of town, I'm not going to be like the trash is his chore.
Right.
You know
exactly.
What I mean? I'm just going to take it out.
Like, whatever. That makes me so angry. But that article sounds really good.
It was
funny because the title of it sounds bad.
And it's why I clicked on it, because I was like, this might be interesting. Yeah, I'm ready. No, it actually was posted by like a person I respect. So I was like, okay, let me try and read this. It was actually from Dylan's mom. So that in 2016, and I sent this to Katie earlier in the week because I really wanted her to get a feeling for this. There's a wonderful commercial by Marks and Spencer where it's called Christmas with Love from Mrs. Claus. It's a commercial ad, so it's only a couple minutes long, so we'll post the link. But
so good.
She gets letters from kids, and kind of Mr. Claus or Santa's walking out the door. He's like, oh, anything new? And she looks down and it's to her, and she's like, no, not really. And then he leaves on his sleigh ride. She gives him kisses, all the stuff. And then she gets in her red helicopter and flies and does all the presents she has to do and then comes home and pretends she's sleeping on the couch for when he gets there. And she's just like, oh, I did all the work and you don't even know.
Well, I love that one too, because it's like this specific one too.
Yeah.
It's like this little kid who he like fucked up and he like ruined his sister's shoes and she like puts
gonna
all
buy these shoes
for my sister, please.
My dog ate them and it is not like
that. Do you remember when we put that on, put on that play?
Put that track down.
But I just love it. You guys really should watch the ad because it also shows how Mr. Claus is like doing things the traditional way, the hard way. And Mrs. Claus is like, dude, it is so much easier if you just use the fucking GPS and the tracker and the helicopter. Like it's in the and I love when she goes to the front door and she looks at the chimney like, what the fuck is wrong with him?
I know. And Mrs. Claus is played by Janet McTeer, who is like such a sexy old woman, older woman, I should say.
Yeah.
And it's just really nice to see like this older woman in her like cozy white sweater and just like
and
then
her short hair. Right. And, like,
gray hair, right? Not dyed.
Yeah.
And then just like balling out in a bright red helicopter. I was like, awesome. This is fantastic. So I definitely suggest that. But it also brings up another trope of the woman and of Mrs. Claus, that his job is important and dominant. And in order for her to do a similar job, she has to praise him and his deeds and then keep her job a secret so to not threaten his manlyhood.
Yeah.
And I think that women do that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, they absolutely do.
They downplay their power position so that, like, the man feels special.
Mm-hmm.
Like the, can you open this jelly jar even though I could clearly open it type of thing.
Well, I was thinking about that because we're watching Marvelous Mrs. Maisel season 3.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that part where Rose is like, no, Abe, like, I've been paying for half of our stuff. She's like, do you think we can live here and live the way we do and go on vacation every summer with just your salary? She's like, no, that comes from, like, my side of the family, my fucking trust fund, whatever. And she's like, you think the maid makes $30 a week? No, she makes $60 a week because I need her to stay. And it's like that thing of, like, she's never wanted to tell Abe before because it's threatening.
Yeah.
Men are weird about money stuff and work stuff.
And power dynamic.
Power dynamic and responsive. Not all of them.
Yeah.
But like, I think that is shifting. But no matter how progressive a man is, I think it's still like in the back of their heads. Like,
and even if it's not their head, they know that other men might be judging them. Other men and women might be judging them because their power position might be lower.
Yeah. And that's what I loved about this season, the series finale of fucking 30 Rock, when Liz Lemon and I forget his name, but he's played by James Marsden.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, no, like, I want you to work and I want to stay at home with the kids.
Yeah.
And like, they thought that they had to switch power dynamics, but they didn't. And I love that. So
it's great.
I don't know what kind of tangents I'm going on tonight.
They're good ones. I mean, that's what it is, because Mrs. Claus, we don't know her name. We know she's a wife and a homemaker, and that's all we know. So that's like a good tangent in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2018, there's a wonderful movie on Netflix. Katie, if you need a good cry, go watch. Well, there's actually two. I'll give you the first one. Christmas Chronicles is a people movie. That's what I call ones with humans, not cartoons. And these two.
Oh, is this one with Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
No.
Okay.
You told me last year. I should.
Yeah.
See it.
These two kids, they lose a parent, and they're trying to get back into Christmas and learning about Christmas after that. And it's a brother and sister trying to like rebuild the relationship with themselves and their mom and all this stuff. And Kurt Russell is Santa, and you only get 2 seconds of Mrs. Claus. But she turns around after he gets back to the North Pole. And of course, it's his Kurt Russell's actual wife, Goldie Hawn. And like, it's one of those moments where you're like, ah, Miss Claus is so sexy. Like, because of course it's Goldie Hawn in like cute Halloween outfit, Mrs. Claus, you know what I mean? So it was just really, really funny, because then I was telling my dad about it the next day and he was like, oh, who played Mrs. Claus? Goldie Hawn? And I was like, yes.
Yeah, actually.
Do you work for Netflix, Dad? But the one that came out this year, this is the most recent depiction of Mrs. Claus. We don't even get to see her. So it's in the 2019 Netflix cartoon called Klaus. and Mrs. Claus has passed away before the movie starts. And her name was Lydia, and her husband could not have children. And they would make all these toys as they wanted to have children. And then they just kind of stockpiled. And then there's like this mailman who meets this like in a poor gray town. So they're kind of bringing back the Kris Kringle thing. Mm-hmm. Meets this school teacher, which is kind of like Mrs. Jessica. Yeah. And they kind of convince Klaus to help hand out these toys to the poor children. Aww. And then Klaus ends up passing away as well. And the Kris Kringle type character says, I don't know how the gifts kept showing up, but every year their spirits kind of like left the gift. So it's like a really cute, like Santa's spirit is real and we don't know what's going on, even though I was a part of the original like gift giving. Right. But it's a really sweet story because we know that Mr. and Mrs. Claus in lore don't have children.
Yeah.
So you wonder like what was the driving force behind gifting things to these children? Like you see Mrs. Claus as the homemaker. She's a baker. She can sew. She can like make things. She can clean things, but doesn't have kids. And she must have felt 250 years ago, so unfulfilled.
Yeah.
Like, even I know it's a stupid fictional character, but it seems so sad that somebody like that, it's almost like a Charlotte. Like, why? Where's her baby?
Yeah.
She deserves a baby.
Yeah. So. That's true.
That's fun. So in the 21st century, we've obviously paid a lot more attention to Mrs. Claus in books like A Bit of Applause for Mrs. Claus, The Story of Mrs. Claus, and What Does Mrs. Claus Do? She's no longer a secondary character living in the shadow of her famous workaholic husband. But when we look closely, we can obviously see she's the keeper of the books, the guardian of the stables, the manager of the employees, and after a 40-plus hour work week, she tends to all of the domestic household chores with precision and grace.
There we go.
Mrs. Claus.
I love it. I love talking Christmas stuff.
Christmas is great.
It makes me so happy.
I hope all of this talk with throwing down the fucks and that Donner is a sucky Rudolph dad.
Yeah, definitely the worst reindeer officially.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I don't know. Coach Comet is pretty rough,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
With his baseball hat. That's what makes him a coach. So we need more drinks so we can talk about some real.
Some real North
women!
Pole action.
Real North Pole.
Real women, real North Pole. It's going to get serious. All right, we'll be right back.
So exciting. Better than ever. Hestruck is here. Hestruck is here.
I always remember
if that's
that.
Not Christmas, I don't know what is.
I always loved those Christmas commercials and the Coca-Cola ones with the little polar bears.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Those were so fucking good.
Well, I saw a Coca-Cola ad / can in the store that was very, they were like changing it to be green to look Christmassy.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't like the cane sugar one. It was just like they made it green and Christmassy. And I was like, you're already the unofficial Christmas drink.
I know.
Santa, the polar bears, the penguins.
You don't need, and also like you don't need to take over all the Christmas colors.
Yeah,
like, red and white are fine.
That's it.
Just stop being greedy.
Come on, you already monopolized the soda industry.
Exactly. All right. Well, do you want to know what you're about to drink for this cold, cold finale?
It's a cold burr. Yes, it looks really, really good. It's blue.
Mm-hmm.
I love blue.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me.
Okay. So I'm calling this cocktail Below the Berg.
Ooh. Like the iceberg?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So this is obviously Antarctica themed / North Pole themed. Ice cap themed, basically.
Okay.
So you have to put a ton of ice cubes in the glass, and then you are supposed to rim it with sugar. I kind of forgot to do that, so it looks a little haphazard tonight. But that's okay. And it is 2 ounces of vodka, an ounce of blue curacao, an ounce of lemonade, and then I put cherry liqueur in the bottom to give it a red bottom, because the women who hiked there talk about like how like you see pinks and blues and blacks and like all these crazy colors on the ice. So I kind of wanted to add a little bit of like a different color in there too.
Okay,
so
cool.
There's red on the bottom and that's the cherry liqueur. And then you top the whole thing with champagne. And that's it.
So there's the
there's
only,
a lot of alcohol
the
in here.
The only not alcohol is lemonade.
Yep, and it's only an ounce.
Okay.
So let's see how this
goes.
So
if you're a sober Sally, just get blue Kool-Aid.
Oh my gosh.
And mix
yeah.
it with lemonade.
Yeah. And it'll be great. Cheers.
Cheers.
I also feel like this drink is going to go in layers. So I feel like we're only getting champagne now.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it's going to get into
blue Curacao and vodka. And then it'll hit the cherry liqueur at the bottom because that's yep. the heaviest.
It's kind of like when you mix your Slurpee at 7-Eleven.
Yeah. Or like when you did that science experiment as a kid where you put oil on top of water on top of dish soap.
Exactly. All right. Well, what do you know about the North Pole Expedition of 1997?
I know it happened in 1997. And I knew you were doing a North Pole expedition tonight. Uh-huh. I knew it had to do with females, but I had no idea what year until uh-huh. you said that in the Let's Get Physical. Uh-huh. And I know that the top of the Earth is ice caps.
Yep.
And that there is a disc that like melts and moves, and they have to keep adding new North Pole things.
Yep.
But there is not a candy cane in a house there,
nope.
unfortunately. I thought there should be a mailbox or something.
Yeah, there should be. There is a point.
Yeah.
There is a North Pole point. And there's a North Pole, and then there's a magnetic North Pole.
Right.
So those two are different. But we're talking about the very tippity top of all the lines on the globe, North
90
Pole.
Degrees north.
Exactly. 90 degrees north.
See, I do know that because I teach longitude and latitude.
Those are the lines I was talking about. Couldn't remember the name.
Okay, well, really, that's all. I don't know anything else.
Fantastic. So.
Is it a wild ride?
It's a really crazy story.
Cool.
Full of twists and turns. It's an adventure story, obviously.
So. I've seen Vertical Limits, but that's about Mount Everest.
Oh, my gosh. I was just watching this thing because like I rock climb and I was watching this thing about like how ridiculous rock climbing scenes are in movies. And it was Alex Honnold and he was breaking them down and he was like, this is ridiculous. Cause they like when they're like in the desert and they have to like cut the one guy loose. He's like, what are they doing? Like ridiculous. I didn't see the movie. I only saw that one clip. But.
Vertical Limits is a great movie. Chris O'Donnell, a star.
Second only to Snow Dogs with Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah. And the Jamaican bobsledding team won. That's also a good one. And Miracle. What are other cold movies?
Mighty Ducks. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I wanted to do my sources because I got mainly this from ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast. It is a great episode. Because the women themselves are, like, telling the story. So that's cool. So if you want more information, you want to listen to it, it's not that long.
Women?
Women? What?
On a sports podcast?
No.
Why?
There's an article by Jason Daly for Smithsonian Magazine that I read. And then Ann Daniels, who we'll be talking about in detail, she did a really awesome TED Talk. And I got a lot of info from her website. So.
Is she, like, the team captain?
No.
Ooh.
She just has a very surprising story, and I'm very interested in her.
I'm ready for it.
Okay. So since 1908, journeys to the North Pole have occurred and have been disputed. I want to make that clear. Like the first person that ever went
they say
there.
That maybe not.
Yeah. They're like, you didn't fucking go. It was like, obviously, like you didn't fucking make it. As of 2014, only 53 expeditions to the North Pole have been successful, and thousands have tried.
So it's like the boys who like don't actually have sex with a girl, but then they go tell all their friends they did.
Exactly.
Got it.
The journey is dangerous, and it is becoming increasingly dangerous as climate change worsens, because the top of the Earth is just the fucking frozen Atlantic Ocean, and it is currently melting,
right,
causing, you know, higher sea rise and all this awful things. So, but back in 1995, it was a very possible thing to do. And there was a British woman named Carolyn Hamilton, and she was hanging out with a friend of hers who was dating a polar ice explorer named Penn Haddo.
And tell
he
her.
Had just exactly. I guess that's like a common name in England. Penn. Penn. I like it. I wish it was spelled with two
short
N's,
for
though.
Benjamin. I can't help myself.
God, that was like the joke of the century. That was good. I was not expecting that. Congratulations.
I'm glad
was that
I
my
slid
Christmas
that in
present?
Before 2020.
Is that my other Christmas present?
Yeah, that was the surprise Christmas present you didn't know about.
So She is talking to this guy, Penn, and he had just completed a trek to the North Pole. It was a team trek. And she's like, I was sitting there and I was talking to him and he's telling me all about this trip. And I'm like, that sounds amazing. I want to do that. You know what? I can do that. And according to Penn, she left on a motorcycle just completely clad in leather. And he was like, man, she's cool. Also, oh my God, what have I done?
She's gonna die.
Also, I want this to happen and I want to help. Like, Penn's really cool.
That sounds fun.
So Carolyn went off to plan the trek with some help from Penn. But a journey of this magnitude is obviously very expensive. The rough cost was about $500,000. So in order to drum up funds, she decided to make it more of a spectacle. So she placed an ad in the paper for everyday ordinary women to accompany her to the North Pole. She put this ad in the Telegraph. Applications are invited from women of any age, background, and occupation, but they will have to prove fitness and commitment. They will have to put up with real pain and discomfort. They will wonder every 10 steps what they are doing, but they have the opportunity in an epic endeavor.
Yo, I do that just when I get out of bed in the morning. Why am I here?
Why am I doing this? This advertisement attracted over 200 women, and 60 ended up showing up at Dartmoor National Park just a few months later to try out for the team. So 200 women applied. 60 women showed up to the tryouts. Some of the women who accepted the challenge were Sue Richardson, a breast cancer survivor. I think she was around like 45.
Get it, girl.
Victoria Humphreys, Sue's daughter, who didn't realize that her mother had joined. Apparently, she was like talking to her mom and she told her about the tryout. She's like, yeah, I'm going to apply for this thing and it's going to be awesome. And her mother, who had just survived a double mastectomy 6 months before, showed up at the tryouts. And her daughter was like, what are you doing here? And she's like, you invited me. And she's like, no, I didn't invite you, mom. Like, why would I want my mom here?
Now she's there.
Now she's there. Paula Powers was a software developer. Sue Philolove was a junior doctor. Lucy Martin was a financial journalist. There was also a police officer, a flight attendant, teachers, stay-at-home moms, and many others who were, again, not elite athletes of any kind. But the one person I want to highlight is Ann Daniels. Ann Daniels is a former bank clerk who recently had to leave her job because she had given birth to triplets.
Ugh!
Can't even imagine.
You don't even have enough boobs for that.
Literally, and we're going to get into that. She said, one day, she's sitting on the floor. Her marriage is not going great. So she's already stressed out about that. She has three babies. These are 18-month-old babies. She's sitting with them on the floor. She's just kind of rolling a ball to them because what else do babies do? And she sees the ad in the paper. And her first thought was like, of course I can't do this. I'm 35. I have three babies. I've literally done nothing ever like that. I'm not even basically athletic. I've never even walked or like put on hiking boots. When I go on vacation, I sit by the pool. Like, no, this is not for me. But then again, she had three babies who were consuming her life. And she said, I would literally sit in a chair with two pillows and put a child to each breast and then a pillow on my knee and feed the third child with a bottle.
Oh,
my God. She's like, I felt like a milking machine. And she is just not happy. And she was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to answer this ad because this opportunity, whatever it is, might not come again. So she applied in January 1996. And her and other 60 women arrived at Dartmoor for the first round of tryouts. The weekend was cold, it was rainy, and absolutely miserable. Anne, of course, was not in the best shape, and she said she cried every night after just feeling totally exhausted and alone and like a bad mother.
Because you're gone. You feel guilty.
You're gone. You're babies.
Serious, like, mom guilt. Serious.
Yeah, serious. So... And her rucksack was just ripping into her shoulders while she just struggled up these paths, watching these other women who, like, were younger and had this outdoor experience, just, like, soaring ahead on these paths. And she just was, like, they're up ahead singing and laughing and joking, and I am behind. I am the caboose of the train. I am fucking struggling. And because she just hadn't done anything that physical in years. But meanwhile, Carolyn's plan was working, and she had attracted a lot of reporters from various papers who enjoyed, as they said, watching these women run around the moors in the mud, pretending they were going to go to the North Pole. I hate when people treat women like they're fucking children. I fucking hate it.
It is the
it's so demeaning.
Yes. It is the most condescending thing that I can think of when people talk about adult women as if they don't know what they're saying.
Exactly.
Because if a young man was to attempt something like that and not go through with it, people would call him daring.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't say pretending
exactly.
to go to the North Pole.
Exactly.
It's so frustrating.
It's like, it's so irritating.
The language we use for women and men is, it's I'm beside myself about it.
Right. It's like, oh, look, there's Alex Honnold just pretending that he's going to actually climb Half Dome with no ropes. Mm-hmm. Like, what? Like, come on.
He walked away the first time.
Yeah. Because he wasn't ready.
No.
So. And of course, they clung on to Anne's story, and she was all over the news because people just could not believe that a woman would leave her baby's home like that, even though men do it all the fucking time. I also want to point out.
Yeah.
She then said that in the middle of one interview, in the middle of this grueling tryout weekend that was just making her miserable, they were talking to her and she realized that it wasn't just a weekend away from the kids that she wanted. It wasn't just to get out of the house or do something different. She really wanted to go to the fucking North Pole. Like, she's like, I realized in the middle of that interview, you know what? I'm not just doing this for no reason. I really want to fucking go. So she knew she wasn't the best there, but she wanted to be. So after these stories started to circulate, they got some sponsors and the money for the trip started to really come in. They had another set of tryouts and they were set for September of that year. And Anne decided that she was going to take the next 9 months and train like a maniac. And she was going to make that team if it fucking killed her.
How many people were they going to take?
20.
Okay. And there were 60.
Mm-hmm.
They were taking 1/3.
Exactly.
See that quick math?
I did. That was nice. So she trained. She said, I would just put my babies in the little bassinet. And she was like, and I would run around my garden for hours and hours while they slept. And, you know, she was like, I would lift anything that I could in the house. I didn't have weights. I didn't have proper training things. I didn't have literally anything. She was like, the neighbors thought I was absolutely insane.
She was like, doing like tricep curls with canned goods.
Exactly. Exactly. She was doing like real homegrown, like gym badass workouts. So they go to training in September and they're back at the moors and she feels like a different person. And that's good because this next set of tryouts is no fucking joke. Before, it was just kind of like, all right, let's see how far you can walk with a rucksack like during the day, da 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 da. But rather than doing just like, you know, these hikes and short drills, they're being like woken up in the middle of the night in the dark and they line them up on the moor and they say, yeah, there's like a Range Rover out in the on the moor. Go find it. Run to it. Run back in the dark in the middle of the night. And she just kept saying like, I was running. And I kept telling myself, like, then they kept yelling at me to pace myself, but I didn't know how to pace myself. And it's just like, I'm running with marathon runners and they know how to pace themselves. Right. And like, I'm just thinking, oh my God, I'm making a huge mistake. But then every step she's like, but I really wanted to get there. I really wanted to keep going. So
I'm blown away by her.
I know. She's amazing.
She's crazy.
And I want to make it clear, too, that this next round of tryouts was difficult for everyone. So the first one, like the more athletic women were like, oh, this is easy. I got this, whatever. And she said she went from being like, you know, the real slow poke to just being one of the regular women in this next one.
Mm-hmm.
But she and 19 other women survived the second tryouts and were chosen to go to the North Pole as part of the McVites Penguin Polar Relay. When Anne first heard this ad for this trek, Her children are only a year and a half old. But by February 28th, 1997, she found herself saying goodbye to her three-year-olds.
Oh, man.
To go do something insane.
You mean to set a great example for her children.
Exactly.
About how to live your goddamn life.
Exactly. And she said, I was sobbing, I was crying, and then I was like, I can't let the last vision my kids possibly see of me. I might die on this trip, be of their mother crying. So she put it together. She was like, I'm so happy. And then she said she completely fell apart, obviously, when she left them. Mm-hmm. But she knew it was the right thing for her to do.
Right. She had worked so hard.
She worked so hard. So the journey to the North Pole takes a long time. So they were doing it, thankfully, for all the people involved, because they're all amateurs, in a relay. So five teams of four women each would take 3 weeks to hike to station points where they would pass off the baton, which they made the baton. I love this. A little stuffed penguin.
Oh.
To the next team. So to get to the North Pole, you first have to get to Resolute, a tiny community in the far northernmost reaches of Canada. So at Resolute, the women met their guides. These guides, I love this story. So apparently, over a few pints, this man named Paul Landry and our old friend, Penn Haddo, got to talking about this all-female expedition. So they're in this bar, and Penn is like, I'm so excited. This all-women team is going to fucking hike to the North Pole. Like, he's psyched on this. He's all in. And Paul Landry, whatever his name is like, oh my gosh, my wife should totally guide them. She's like the most badass ice person ever. Like, if they want to survive on the ice, they gotta totally go with my wife. And Penn is like, all right, let's fucking do it. So Paul goes home and he tells his 45-year-old wife, Maddie McNair, which I love a girl named Maddie. And it's with T's too.
Ooh, Maddie.
Yes. He tells her the deal and he's like, you know, you're the only one who can get them there alive. And she was like, okay. And he's like, no, you should fucking do this. And she's like, okay, but I got to get my girl Denise in on this. And she calls up her friend and mentor, Denise Martin, who was a well-experienced Arctic guide who had lived in the Yukon, probably with Yukon Cornelius.
Absolutely with Yukon Cornelius.
So Denise is on board. Maddie's on board. We've got our Arctic guides.
And I love that. They're female Arctic guides.
They're female Arctic guides.
Actual female.
They are two of the most experienced Arctic guides in the world at this point. They know what they're fucking doing. We are doing a lot of F words today.
Listen, happy fucking Christmas.
But neither of them had ever been to the North Pole. So they were really excited because very, very few women have been to the North Pole. And no all-woman team has ever made the trip. So, Jeff Summers is the only, like, kind of only and final man in the plan. It was his job to kind of make sure that when these women got to Resolute, he went over basic survival skills with them.
Yeah, and I think...
Because they wouldn't die in the Arctic. So they wouldn't die in the Arctic.
I think it's important that, like, we point out that every person that ever does anything in those types of circumstances has a guide. Like, the people who climb Mount Everest, you go with a Tibetan guide.
Oh, yeah.
So
you're not allowed to do that alone.
Yeah, like, Edmund Hillary may have been, like, the first Englishman to the top, but he was with, like, a Tibetan guide.
Like, yeah. Nobody ever talks about the Tibetan people that go to the Mount Everest.
All the time.
All the time.
They live on its foothills. Oh, and the same is true of the North Pole. You have so many people who, like, they guide the hikers there.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, it's also true of non-cold places like the Amazon.
Yeah.
So, and safaris and like things like that. We always talk about
all
the people who made the trip, but not the people who are so experienced that they're helping the people make the trip.
Exactly.
So I wanted to point that out, that it's not like these women needed a guide because they were dumb.
Yeah.
Everyone needs one.
So Jeff Summers is telling them all these things like, please do this, don't do this. And he just kept thinking to himself, oh my gosh, most of these women haven't been outside of London. Like, what the fuck am I doing? But on March 14th, 1997, they dropped off the first crew on the ice for the first three-week section of the trek. Maddie McNair and Denise, Claire Fletcher, Sue Fullilove, Jan McCormick and Ann Daniels watched the plane leave and felt so alone. To quote Ann, she said, "And the ice is, it's everything. It's sharp. It's jagged, harsh lines. It's soft, beautiful, undulating snow. It's crystals where the sun glints on the crystals of the ice. And it reflects in different colors. So you see the pastels, the pinks, the blues. And the ice itself can be frosted white or aquamarine clear blue. Because the thing about the Arctic is that it's literally a giant sheath of ice. It's
there's no land.
Frozen ocean. There's no land underneath of it. It's a frozen ocean. And it's covered with these mountains made of ice. So they move. And they said you're on this ice and it moves while you're standing there. And sometimes it moves so, like, big chunks of it move so slowly and quickly at the same time that it sounds like a train is coming."
Oh.
Which is horrifying.
How eerie. How do you sleep on that?
So when doing a trek like this, you aren't just walking on the ice. You have these large skis attached to your feet. So you're kind of cross-country skiing. You have snowshoes. You have these huge snowsuits on that you can't really take off. You will be in these clothes the entire time without showering.
12 petticoats.
Mm-hmm. You have 12 petticoats on. You are also connected to a small boat, which you must drag behind you the entire time. And that boat contains everything you need to survive.
Mm.
These are called pulks or sledges. And so they're these like little boats with these like red bottoms, and they typically float, but they can also sink. And if they sink and you are attached to it, you will die and drown in the Arctic.
Why would it sink?
Because they're heavy, because they have all that shit on them.
Oh, so and like if it goes through the ice
at a weird angle and capsizes,
you get pulled in.
You get
too.
Pulled in. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Because it's literally tethered to your back the whole time.
Okay.
And these can weigh hundreds of pounds. So
you go down with the narwhals mm-hmm. into whale unicorn land.
Yeah, exactly. So, but they're doing it. They're hiking.
Doing it.
They
doing
are
it
zigzagging across the ice. And so now we're going to jump to March 26th. They've been on the ice for 12 days now. And it's typically around negative 34 degrees Celsius.
Duh! It was like 31 today in Maryland. And I was like,
I was really
why
upset.
Is it so cold?
So
at some
trekking.
Point, your body just has to be like, okay.
I know. Yeah, it has to.
And you're probably so sweaty from moving.
Yep. Exactly.
It's still fucking cold, though.
It's really fucking cold. So the ice is shifting as normal on this day, March 26th, but suddenly, and like they walk in a line, you know, so they're not just all like random, like they walk in a line together, but they're kind of far apart because some people are faster or slower than others. So Anne is looking up and she sees the person in front of her, Claire. She sees Claire's foot break the ice.
Oh no.
And she's looking and she's like, oh my God. And then all of a sudden, without even her being able to think about it, her foot breaks through. And Claire had managed to get ahead of the cracks, but Anne is suddenly in the water. Claire in front of her couldn't see her, and the women behind her only saw that she had stopped. And Anne is screaming, but no one can hear her. Because, again, this is the Arctic. When the wind blows, it's like it's blowing snow and ice, so you just cannot see ahead of you. So she's screaming. No one can hear her.
Wait, her one foot's in the water or her whole body?
Her whole body's in the water right now.
Jesus Christ.
She reaches up. She grabs onto this boulder of ice and lifts herself out. But that ice cracked, and it just completely breaks off, and she slides back into the water. She tried a second time, and the same thing happened. She's trying to stay calm, but she's scared and she's alone right now. And she knows that if any water breaks through her suit and she gets wet, she will die.
Hypothermic. Immediately.
Immediately. And so she finally manages to get out of the water, but she has to act quickly because she cannot let the water on her suit freeze either.
Yeah.
So Maddie finally gets to her and she's yelling at her. She's like, roll in the snow, roll in the snow. It's kind of like when you're in fire. She's like, stop, drop, and roll. Because since the Arctic is like a desert, but opposite. It's ice. The snow is really, really dry, so it absorbs the moisture. Yeah. And so she rolls around the snow, and it successfully absorbs all the water. And so there's no water in her snowsuit anymore, which is really good.
Downy Paper Towels needs to contact the Arctic.
So the girls are now crowded around her, helping her with her boots and changing her socks. And they're feeling scared, but also just so grateful that Anne is okay. And they look over to the hole where Anne almost like fucking died. And a little seal pops its head out as if to say, "Hey, I'm glad you're okay." And they said it just brought them like this little bit of joy before they had to get themselves together and get moving, because Anne had to warm up again. She had to get moving. And there's just no time in the Arctic to decompress after a near-death experience. You have to keep moving.
Also, joy, the seal's probably there because the ice is thin enough for them to breathe through it. Like, they probably can get up.
Yep.
Go to a new spot.
So Anne's cold and her entire body hurt, but she knew she had to keep going. To get through the rest of that journey, she just kept chanting the names of her children. She would say, "Lucy, Joseph, Rachel, Lucy, Joseph, Rachel, Lucy, Joseph, Rachel." And it worked. They kept moving. And on March 30th, 1997, they finished the first leg of the relay journey. And they passed off the penguin baton to the next group. They had just gone 56 nautical miles across one of the harshest environments in the world in 17 days. And I want to say, too, they say that the first leg of the journey to the North Pole is the hardest.
Huh.
And I wonder if it's because you're still kind of a little down south, so you're getting two different climates meeting. Mm. So it's still like below 34, but I wonder if you're getting kind of humidity and moisture from the land of Canada. You know right. what I'm saying? And that's why it's a little more unstable. Because I feel like the further north you go, you know, those possibilities become less of like, you know.
And there's three legs.
Yeah, there's five.
And
there's
so five legs. They would pass the baton. Did they switch every other leg?
No, each team would just go once. So now Anne is done.
Got it.
Yep. So this was the only part that Anne did. It's a relay.
Okay.
So because these are amateurs, they don't know what they're doing. And a lot of people do this. It's not just because they're women.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, that seems like a pretty common, like, okay, we'll drop you off.
Exactly.
Pick up where they left off.
So
I think people do that with the Appalachian Trail, too.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too.
Like the Pacific.
Oh, definitely the Pacific Crest Trail. Yeah, that trail's fucking nuts.
People even do it with the Great Wall of China.
Oh, really?
It's super long. Yeah. If you want to walk the whole thing, you'll do like a relay. You can like pass off. Yeah.
So they finally get done, but Anne didn't want to leave. She got to the end and she felt this really extreme depression because she didn't want to leave the ice. She just totally fell in love with the environment. And this feeling was only made worse when the plane that was going to take them away came and they picked them up. Everyone was so excited. They're going to get warm again. And everyone had letters from their family except Anne, every single person. And this is when she knew that her marriage was over. She was like, "Well, I guess I'm getting divorced when I go back."
Oh.
She felt like she was experiencing like two breakups in that day.
It's her eat, pray, love moment.
Yeah. I mean, like she was experiencing breaking up with the ice and the North Pole and breaking up with her husband. I mean, all she had left with her right now is the memories of her ice and these three babies to go home to.
Mm-hmm. I think it's hard because when you accomplish something really big, I know a lot of people go through this when they, after their PhD, it's like called the PhD blues. Like you do something really big and you realize, oh, but I'm just still the same person. Mm-hmm. Like nothing about me is different. And you expect this like big difference and it's not there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's probably how she was feeling. Like I've accomplished this amazing thing, but I'm still Anne Daniels.
Yeah.
And I still have three children and a husband I'm not 100% happy with. And like, I might have done something awesome, but that doesn't erase everything else.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Cause it's just a horrible feeling. Cause I know like a lot of like college students like experience that.
Oh yeah.
Like even like with undergrad, it's like, oh, I'm done.
Right.
No more deadlines.
What now?
What now?
Yeah.
But there was still former likes to go of the Arctic journey. So the next group was off and they marched 72 nautical miles and handed the penguin off to the third group, which included mother-daughter team Sue and Victoria, Paula Power, and Lynn Clark. They set off on April 12th, but on April 20th, a terrible storm had hit the ice. It made the conditions much too dangerous to walk. So they just took a day off and they stayed inside the tents, which was like really nice at first because they were like, we just got to hang out and make some food and play some games and like not be freezing for 24 hours. That was really nice. Like, it's still fucking cold, but not as cold. They even got to make they made chocolate shortbread out of like whatever they had. It kind of reminds me of like how like people in prison are like, oh yeah, I made like cheesecake in prison. Yeah. Or a shank. Well, how like you learn how to cook with what you have.
Right.
You know, so they made chocolate shortbread.
Me with my taco seasoning this evening.
Exactly. All comes full circle. So they got the next morning and the conditions are nice. They're ready to hike again. But they realized that they had slid nearly 20 nautical miles away from their path. They
had
just slid in the night. Can you even imagine?
Sliding.
Sliding.
They didn't like hunker themselves down with some pins.
Well, I don't know because I don't know if I couldn't tell like if they were like literally sliding on the ice or like the ice caps were moving and they didn't realize. Like, but 20 miles in one night they slid.
And they had already tried to walk so far.
I know. So they're suddenly in this like misty area far away from where they needed to be, but they had to keep going. So they set off. But since everything had shifted so much, Sue, the mother who just survived cancer, is walking. And she said all of a sudden the ice just disintegrated underneath of her. And she is suddenly completely in the water. Her daughter, Victoria, sees her and she just like runs to her, and her and Maddie are going and they just see her kind of slipping and they're like, ski, 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 like go faster to just ski away. But she's falling way too quickly. And Victoria said, I was thinking, oh my God, my mom survived cancer and now she's going to die in the fucking Arctic.
Because I invited her here.
Exactly.
I faux invited her.
I accidentally invited her. And then suddenly Victoria slips into the water. And then to make matters worse, Denise falls in, no, the other guide.
And Maddie's alone?
Yes. And Maddie is the only guide not in the water. 3 out of 6 people, half the people, are in the below freezing negative 45 degree Arctic water. And the plates are shifting apart and they're strapped to those fucking sleds with all of their supplies. So if the sleds make it into the water and start going down, they are fucked. And they just really can't like help them too much like the other women, because
where
they're at is thin ice, so the ice is fragile and they could all end up in the water, which would mean death for all of them.
Right.
After a few horrifying minutes, they are in this Arctic water for minutes. Sue and Victoria finally drift over to solid ice and Maddie pulls them out. Denise, however, drifts over to the other side of the ice because now it's kind of like a river. And the other women, Paula and Lynn, help her out. Denise is screaming in pain. She's scared. She lost her skis and her boots in the water.
Oh, so her feet are freezing cold.
Her feet are freezing. But this is not their biggest problem right now. Their biggest problem is that when the ice broke, it caused a literal river to run between the three women and the other three women, and they can't get to each other. Sue had also lost a boot, so now we're dealing with lots of lost gear. They don't know how to get across, so they just wrap their feet up in whatever they fucking have, and they just keep walking to try and get back to each other. So they're kind of like on each side, walking along, trying to find some sort of ice bridge to get across. But of course, they don't come across an ice bridge. They come across a Y junction. So the people on the one side are like, well, our path goes this way and your path goes this way. And now we literally cannot get to each other because we're going to be going completely opposite directions. But suddenly the ice started shifting again, like it does in these Arctic poles. And within a few short time frames, things started to freeze over again, and they were able to, like, get on this shifting ice and get across and get the group back together. Thank God.
I'm, like, holding my breath. That's why I'm not talking. I'm like...
That's how I felt when I was, like... Because I'm listening to, like, them tell the story, and I'm like, how did you survive?
This is, like, horizontal limits.
It's flat limits. So they set up camp, and by the next morning, the entire river that had nearly killed them was frozen over again. But the ice had, like, pushed up their gear, so they said it was, like, frozen, like, ice sculptures all across this, like, tundra.
So they were, like, their boots were just out for
the taking.
Yeah, like,
their boots, their skis, like, their whatever. It's, like, I can't even imagine. I wish, like, I could have seen, like, pictures of it, because I just can't imagine it, you know?
I bet it was Mrs. Claus's rainbow chickens that put it there.
Those sneaky bastards. So
off-season.
Maddie, like a badass, takes her axe and she chops out their gear, and they get their gear back, and the group kept moving. On April 29th, they reached their destination, handed off the penguin, and were off to recover from their traumatic trip on the ice. Sue later wrote in her diary that falling in the water was the worst day of her life, worse than finding out that she had cancer. As she said, quote, "Cancer is something you can't see, but in the Arctic, the reality is right there in front of you, and there is no escape." Which I, like, kind of get, you know? It's like, with something like a disease, it's like, I know it's in my body, and, like, I feel like sometimes that can be more scary of, like, I don't know what it's doing or where it is. But then, like, when you are trapped in water with, like, potential polar bears around you that could kill you. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like, that's really fucking scary.
And I mean, anything. Orcas, polar bears, seals bite. Like, things are wild up there. But also, I think cancer's not a choice.
Mm-mm.
Right? And, like, going on this Arctic journey was. And then I think the idea of dying in front of your child would be also horrifying. So you're there, like, I don't want my daughter to come after me because I don't want her to die. But I also don't want her to see me die.
Oh, my gosh.
And then her daughter's in the water. Yeah. Ugh. That's, like, that's too much.
That's,
like,
a lot wrapped into one.
Because then the two of you, if either one of you die, then you'll never forgive yourself the way it happened. So I'm sure the guilt and trauma wrapped up in that experience is so much, like, higher caliber than cancer, because you didn't choose cancer.
Yep.
Like, cancer occurred.
Yep. Exactly.
Also, though, if you do an amazing thing and something happens to you, as long as you weren't being reckless, like...
Yeah.
That's also not your fault.
No, it's not.
Like, you had a guide, you had training.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times people get into those really, like, hardcore situations, and it's like, well, why did they put themselves in a situation like that if they were a mother? And it's like, well, maybe that's a weird way to look at it.
Right,
like,
exactly.
every person on this planet is either a child or a parent. Mm-hmm. Like, all of us. So you can put yourself in situations.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's true. So, the next group made their journey with no prominent issues, and then it was time for the final leg of the journey. Lucy Martin, Palm Oliver, which I love, her name is just P-O-M, Palm, Zoe Hudson, and Carolyn Hamilton, the organizer of this whole excursion, set off with 110 miles left to go. And May 26th, 1997, on Denise's birthday, the first all-female relay team completed the 500-mile trek and reached the North Pole. And it's so great because Maddie and Denise went through the whole thing, you know? So they did not get picked up and dropped back off,
they
which
were
I think
other
is
person,
incredible.
Right? Or were they with
they
every
were together
crew?
With every crew.
Holy fuck. 500 miles.
500 miles.
With inexperienced hikers.
And they started in March, and it is now, let's see, May.
And that sounds...
That's a lot.
Horrendous. I would be like, drunk husband, next time you come in from the bar with an idea, I'm going to put you in front of the dartboard. I'm done with you.
Well, it's funny, too, because Maddie and Denise, who, again, had guided the entire trip, said that you get there, and, like, you're like, oh, my gosh, we're here. And you're...
feeling so proud of yourself, but it's also kind of a funny feeling because you accomplished this thing and you're literally at the top of the world, but it's just a point, so it doesn't look any different from the shit from that you've been seeing for 500 miles.
I mean, at least it's not like a mountain and you have to like walk back down.
But that's the thing. That's very true. But they were saying like when you get to the top of Mount Everest, you stand at the top and you look at like this mountain that you just conquered. And it's like this thing that like, wow, I did this. And at the North Pole, it's like, yeah, more ice. Fantastic. Like, wow. I kind of wish Mrs. Claus was here to like give me some goddamn hot chocolate.
Where the hell
where is she?
Are the elves?
And it's just like underwhelming and overwhelming at the same time. And they didn't know what to do. So they just started singing the British National Anthem. And it's
Hail to the Queen.
I just think it's so cute. And especially like hearing the footage of them finishing the trip. They're at the literal top of the world. So they're at the starting point of every time zone. So Carolyn was...
They're at every day at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So this is Carolyn Hamilton running around. She goes, I'm in the same time zone as London. And if I keep walking around this way in a circle, I'm going to be walking through all the time zones in the world. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. I think I'm in Moscow now. And then Maddie said, if I run around the North Pole kind of clockwise, will I get younger? If I stay over here, it's tomorrow. If I go over here, it's yesterday. Like, they were just having such a good time and probably, like, so delirious, too. Like,
So every year, students have theories about the end of the world. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like, well, we'd know already. We're so far from the international dateline that, like, if there's a specific day when the world ends.
That's true.
We would know.
I've never thought about the fact that having a date for the world ending is so stupid because we have different dates. God damn it.
It's in the middle of the Pacific fucking ocean. We would know 12 hours ahead. All the time. I love it. I'm like, meh. I don't know.
We'd Y2K is a joke.
Everybody sits by their TVs, crosses their fingers. Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
If it doesn't happen in Thailand, we're good.
So they did the thing. Many of the women settled back into their lives. But for others, it was a real game changer. I mean, for Victoria, she ended up quitting her job, breaking up with her boyfriend, and just changing her whole life. She moved out of London. She just was on the ice, and she was like, I don't love him. I don't want to marry him. I don't like living in London anymore. I want a new job. Like, I want a new job. I want a new location. She was just, like, done with it all.
Hi, King and Queen.
And, of course, for Anne, she hadn't left her husband. He actually left her while she was trekking to the North Pole. But she said, I hadn't been happy for a while. It makes sense that we were not together, but it also was really stressful coming back to being a single mother of triplets.
Wait, so like bitch ass moved out while she was gone?
Yes, because he didn't even take care of the fucking children when she was gone. This is the bullshit.
Was it grandma?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So her mother took the children. He wasn't even watching the triplets.
3-year-old triplets as a grandma.
3-year-old triplets.
Mommy's meeting Santa Claus.
I just can't even imagine. And then he is just like, I don't like this. And just leaves her and like serves her divorce papers while she's in the fucking Arctic. What a dickhead.
Sign him, girl.
What
Sign
a
him.
Dickhead. So, but she's back to her old life. She's feeling depressed, but she is like, you know what? I don't care that I am suddenly back single mother of triplets with no money. She's like, I'm still going to change my life. So she calls up friends from the first trek, and she said, I want to go back to the Arctic. She was like, what if we did the first all-British female expedition to the South Pole?
No.
So she gets together, five of the same women, or like four plus her,
going
the same
to the
women.
Antarctic.
Going to the Antarctic. She said they taught themselves in the months leading up to their trip how to navigate with the sun, and they went down to the fucking South Pole, and they walked for 61 days across Antarctica and accomplished their journey.
They made it to the South Pole, too?
Uh-huh.
No way!
Because the South Pole is actually, I think from what I was reading, it's easier because it's
all
more
penguins,
consistent.
No polar bears.
Exactly. No
polar
bears.
There's land.
And there's the ice is more consistent. So I was watching his videos of these people and they're literally like jumping over like crevasses and then having to like tug their little boat behind them. But with the Arctic, it's all frozen still, you know, so it's like pretty easy, you know, goings. So they do this, but Anne wasn't done there. She wanted to go back to the North Pole and do the whole fucking thing. So she asked Pom, who I thought her name was so cute before, and Carolyn, who organized the whole first trip, if they wanted to do it the whole way. And they were like, I don't know. You know, yeah, let's do it. So, so they planned and trained for over a year to make the journey. And in 2002, they embarked on their second trip to the North Pole with their sledges in tow. But this time, since there wasn't like more people to share the weight, their little boats weighed 300 pounds.
And they're just dragging them behind
them?
And
they're just dragging them.
That's mayhem.
Unbelievable. And these are like in temperatures also further below than what they had experienced the first time. It was negative 42 and between like negative 42 and negative 56 degrees. And with wind chill, it got down to negative 70. Their equipment was just freezing all the time.
I don't understand that. Wind chill, I don't understand.
I don't want anything to do
every
with
time
it.
The news comes on and they're like, it's 30 degrees today. Feels like 10.
I'm I know.
Like, so so it's 10.
So it's 10. Just say it's 10. Tell me I need like a hat and gloves. Just tell me that.
Earmuffs even. Like, tell why. Feels like.
Tell me I need to take a shot of whiskey before I leave the house.
It will warm me up.
Let me know. WBAL. My God. So.
It's really frustrating.
Really frustrating. So, and since they were traveling further and had to make more apt decisions as to what they bring than the first time, she says they had to sacrifice some things, and one of them was toilet paper. So they literally wiped their butts with ice wedges.
That's horrible.
She's doing her TED talk, and she was like, we had to wipe our butts with ice wedges. And she goes, and everybody's like, oh my, and everybody's like, woo, or like whatever. And she's like, I did that. Like, and she just kind of mumbles it under her breath. And she's like, yeah, I did that. And I was like, oh my God.
I'm trying to understand. Okay, so like, I don't want to understand.
Nope. I don't want any part
of
that.
I'm trying to decide what's better, wiping your butt with ice wedges or wiping your butt with a leaf, unidentified leaf from the Amazon. If you're in one of two places.
Okay.
Or sand in the Sahara. What's worse?
Oh, I think sand in the Sahara
That's
is
the worst?
Absolute worst.
What's the best?
The best is the leaf in the forest.
You
because
think?
You're only taking a slim chance of it giving you something itchy. I feel like Arctic ice is really fucking bad.
And it's not like warm enough to melt on you so you can clean it off. Like,
or maybe it does. That's
maybe
like,
it like
think,
melts on
I
you?
Think I would do like a scoop of snow.
You'd cup it
and
up.
And then I'd cup it up.
This is part of your legacy.
And it's like, that is not how it works.
Listen, I'm playing
Listen.
That segment at your funeral.
Listen. Which will be tomorrow.
Listen, if somebody
I shouldn't say that. Knock on.
God.
Is that wood?
Knock on
know.
IKEA.
Knock on IKEA.
All
knock
I
on
know,
the nutcrackeress.
If somebody doesn't play a montage of my quotes from this podcast at my funeral, then I haven't lived.
Okay. But the ice wedge toilet paper is not the worst part of this trip, shockingly.
What's the worst part?
They encountered three big storms during this trip, which caused travel issues.
I thought you were going to say, like,
three big shits.
A monster. I just want
one Yeti.
thank you. That's what I was waiting for.
But there were also multiple health issues. They all had a little bit of carbon monoxide poisoning. And frostbite.
Did they park their cars in the garage too long? No radon testing
in
the Arctic.
I forget what caused the carbon monoxide poisoning. I read it and was like, I don't need to put that in. I probably should have.
No, we don't
so
need to know.
So they all had frostbite, but Pom's was the worst.
fucking Anne put up a picture of Pom's frostbitten toes during her TED talk. And
did the toes have to be amputated?
No, thank God. And they also had gangrene, so I don't know how they didn't need to be amputated, but Pom was okay. But Anne was like, yeah, I know this is horrible and disgusting, but she was like, Pom went through a lot, so I'm just going to leave this up here because what you're experiencing now is nothing near to what she was experiencing in the Arctic. Because she trekked for 47 days with frostbitten toes and gangrene.
I can't imagine. Because isn't like, I mean, frostbite, like you pretty much your extremities freeze so much that the blood can't get to it, right? Mm-hmm. Like your veins are frozen.
Yeah.
And so your body's literally dying off of you.
Exactly.
That
horrible
is.
And there are just like these open sores all over her toes. It's just disgusting. Sorry, everyone who's listening to this.
Merry Christmas.
So, Merry Christmas. Casey loves to sing that. And I go, Casey, the song is Happy Birthday. And he goes, I like it better that way. Merry Christmas.
Listen, Skateland should fix it up.
Yeah. So, she trekked with frostbitten and gangrene toes for 47 days.
What is gangrene?
Don't know.
Me neither. That's
good. Don't want to know, honestly. I know that it was the gangrene gang was a thing in Powerpuff Girls, but that's like all I know. I think it's like when you get like a flesh-eating bacteria or something okay. like that.
I'm down for that.
Don't quote me on that. Don't quote me on that.
Don't quote me on it.
But when the supply plane came to them, Pom had to make the difficult decision to give up her dream of completing the trek so that Carolyn and Anne could finish. She was
so
like,
she had to leave?
She was like, I'm just going to slow you guys down. I might really, really get fucked up later on. She was like, this isn't good. I want you guys to finish. It's okay if I don't. So
selfless.
They continued through the snow and ice and even water during this trek because now it's a little later on and the polar ice caps are already melting a little bit. So they had to swim across certain channels. They had to swim. They had these like really fancy suits. She was talking about like the guy who designed them, and like you can get into the water in these ones a little bit easier. But
no,
they
can't.
Walked, skied, and swam for 15 miles a day.
Talk about a triathlon.
Exactly. But they eventually made it, and they had become the first all women's team in the world to go to both poles, a feat that has never been repeated. In 2005, she attempted the journey solo from Russia. This is Anne. But after 21 days, 175 miles, and 5 polar bear encounters, there was one tracking her. She said, I didn't shake this polar bear for 3 days.
What is wrong with Russian polar bears?
I don't know. They're drunk. So
on vodka.
So she, after all this, the Russian government was like, we're pulling all your permits. And she was not allowed to finish the trip. Then our old pal.
Thanks, Putin.
Penn Haddo. Not Putin. Penn Haddo contacted Anne and asked her if she would lead a scientific polar ice excursion. Penn was like, we're going up there to do all these experiments. But he was like, I'm going to be really busy with the experiments. They were like attempting to like determine the thickness of the ice or something like that. And he was like, I'm just not going to be able to navigate. So will you navigate our trip to in the Arctic? And she was like, yeah, I'll fucking do that. So she navigated with a map, the sun, and a watch. And she led a team of scientists on a 75-day journey on the ice. After this, she met her new partner, Tom, and they had a little girl named Sarah, so now she's a mother of 4. And then soon after that, Penn called her up again to lead another trek in 2009, and then again in 2011. Anne is now one of the most decorated and experienced polar guides on the planet. She has broken world records. She is a prolific speaker on climate change, and she uses her knowledge and firsthand experiences to lecture on not only the melting ice, but how the chemistry of the ocean is changing and becoming more acidic and corroding the planet. She works with NASA, the European Space Agency, and
the National and Oceanic Administration to continue important research and learn about our polar ice caps and what is happening to our planet.
I'm obsessed with her.
I know. She's amazing. Trips to the North Pole are becoming increasingly difficult, and soon it will be literally impossible to make the trip because the ice is melting at an alarming rate.
Well, it won't be land anymore.
It won't
be. We've assumed the ice as land for so long.
Yeah. So Anne will probably retain her titles. But she is also going to keep going and keep pushing towards her goal to stop this damage to the Earth from going any further, because she wants people to, like, go up. She wants women to, like, beat her records and, like, go accomplish these things that she's done too. She wants more people to fall in love with the ice and care about it as much as she does. But all she's got is just these amazing explorations and her fucking literal homemade skills.
I find that so fascinating because I know... Recently, we've been doing, like, a lot of people who, like, got really, really famous and or popular in their late 20s or early 30s.
Yeah.
So I've been in, like, this place of, like, well, what does that mean? Does that mean I'm done? Mm-hmm. Is that it? This is it? Mm-hmm. Like, this is my life? And then you hear stories like this where it's just, like, she didn't have a fancy degree.
No.
She didn't have anything. She just had determination and just, she didn't get lucky. That's the best part about it.
Mm-hmm.
She went and she was like, I'm gonna go to this thing. She realized she wasn't fit enough, so she took her time and got fucking fit and then came back and won her way onto this journey just by being a badass.
Dude, she left high school at the age of 16.
Yeah.
She didn't finish high school. She didn't go to, like, she was just working at a bank and then had a bunch of kids. Like, I'm just obsessed with the fact that she is, like, one of the most, like, just self-made women. Like, she reminds me of Jane Goodall.
Yes.
Oh,
so much.
God.
So much. Like, I don't have a degree, and I'm just what passionate. I'm gonna do. And I think that with the Jane Goodall story, it's like, oh, that's how it used to be, but now women are supposed to be just as good as blah, blah, blah. But no, this happened in the 90s.
This is the 90s and 2000s. Like, I was alive during all of this.
Yeah. That's so cool. I'm in love with it. I think it's
I'm glad.
I'm very excited about her story because I knew nothing about her. And I love the idea that it wasn't some, like, badass hiker woman.
Yes.
Because I pictured, like, some really experienced, like,
I know,
hiker women.
And I think it's amazing that just 18 months after, like, giving birth to triplets and just being home alone with them, she was like, I'm going to fucking change my life.
Yo, I had one kid and was like, this sucks. I guess three puts you over.
Three is over the limit. You are a DUI.
Three at what?
Driving under the influence of children.
Driving under infants. Now we're ready for a little segment we like to call
All I Want for Christmas is Two.
Ooh, baby.
Where we talk about these two women in conversation with each other.
Well, listen, I cannot get over the fact that she rode off on a fucking motorcycle.
I know!
Because that's what was happening with, like, Mrs. Claus with the helicopter. She was, like, in conversation with a man.
I know.
And then just, like, went off on her badass machinery.
Well, and also, it makes me think about the difference between these two stories of, like, Mrs. Claus feels like she needs to, like, hide her accomplishments and, like, hide her fucking work. And these women are like, I don't give a shit whether you're in or not, but, like, we're doing it. And then that guy Penn was like, no, I'm all in. He's like, I'm afraid, I'm nervous, but I'm in. I'm gonna support you guys and I'm gonna help you, like, get funding, get people, like,
I'm gonna show up for it. Let's talk about a male feminist.
Will Santa Claus show up? That is the hard question.
Santa needs to show.
Will he show up? I don't know.
I don't either. I adored the fact that Anne had three children. And we talked about Mrs. Santa Claus in the conversation of being barren. And even, like, in this new cartoon movie, Klaus, they show
the male figure crying because he can't have kids. Like, he's having an emotional breakdown. Like, so they are together childless, and Anne is in the complete opposite space where she's like, I had these babies, I thought I loved this man, and now I have these babies alone and I don't know what to do. So they're just on opposite ends of the spectrum, and both perfectly acceptable emotions.
Yeah.
I am so there for a woman who can't have kids and is like, I can't be around any woman that has babies right now. Mm-hmm. Please leave me alone. And I'm also so there for a woman who has so many kids that they're just like, fuck my life. I haven't slept in 2 years.
Right. Or even one kid. Because yeah. I wonder, like, did Anne suffer from, like, postpartum depression? And she was like, I, like, because that's the thing.
Or even the baby blues. Like,
yeah. Because I feel like when women have children and, like, you know, some experience just the baby blues, some experience postpartum depression, obviously I don't know anything about this, but, like, I feel like people think, oh, then you don't love your kids, and right. It's like no, like, the love is there, I'm just experiencing some really intense hormonal, like, depressive, like, shit that, like, is complicated, and don't tell me I don't love my kids just right. because this is happening to me. And, like, I feel like Anne was experiencing that tenfold, because then she, like, did go off and do this thing that's like, why does my love for myself and wanting to do this thing equal me not loving my children?
And I loved that you explained her crying, like, when she was getting ready to leave, because I know, like, your first day back to work after maternity leave, you can't wait to go back. You're nervous. You're excited. Mm-hmm. You want to see your friends. You mm-hmm. want to see your boss. You want to be in your place. You want to have a minute to pee without somebody clinging to your boob.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, you are just all day, anytime you have a minute by yourself, crying because yeah. you're like, I'm missing something.
Yep.
I should be there. I'm supposed to be there. So it's just such an intense moment. And to think, like, the idea of the clauses is that they watch children all yeah. year when you're not there is so neat. Like, we see you yeah. when you're sleeping, we know when you're awake, like, your mom's gone at the North Pole and I live at the North Pole, but I can see you when she can't.
But also, like, the thing of, like, fucking Sally Buttermilk and, like, are you trying to be better or are you just being terrible? And, like, it kind of reminds
Sally
me of,
Sally Buttermilk.
Like,
cheers to you, girl.
Cheers to Sally, man. That was all me.
Trying to control her temper.
Trying to control my temper and just doing a shit job,
girl,
of it.
Girl, why do you think I included that quote? Sally Buttermilk.
My literal childhood bedroom door does not have a doorknob on it. Just not because my parents took it away because I was bad, but because I slammed the door so many times.
It broke off.
It fell off.
It broke off of the house.
Man, I was a monster. But also, I'm thinking about this in a broader context of, so I'm not a mother.
Mm-hmm.
You are.
Mm-hmm.
Does this hit home for you in the idea of, like, women without children judging other people's children without having the firsthand experience?
That is such an interesting point that I didn't think of. It's funny because I don't think I ever care if people judge my children.
Okay.
I care if people judge me.
You. Okay.
So, like, if my teacher is like, your daughter was being a jackass today, I'm like, yeah, give it to her.
Yeah.
Like, take away recess.
Throw the book.
Like, hit her. Like, okay, psych, don't hit her. No, but. But, like, I, like, if like, for
the
example.
On the rocks is officially anti-corporal punishment.
Sold separately.
Oh, my God. Do not eat.
So I think, like, if somebody came to me and was like, your kid didn't turn this in, they turned it in late, so, like, I'm going to have to give them 50%, I'd be like, no, fail them.
Right.
They should get a zero.
Yeah.
Like, I'm all in on other people helping me rear my children.
Yes.
Which is what I think the goal of the clauses is. I mean, okay. In real life, they're just child-bearing helpers. But I think the issue is most often people don't judge your children. They don't look at a kid and go, they're upset because they haven't slept. They're tired. They don't understand hormones. They look and they go,
God, that mother must not know how to reel it in. That mother must not know how to discipline her child. So everything comes back to the mother's fault, even though there are two parents.
Yeah.
And it's not the mother's fault. Like, that's a little person.
Yep.
And I think kids are treated like bad a lot. And I enjoy that the clauses are like these over. I don't know. It's weird because they're not. They're awarding. I don't know. I don't know what they do because they don't treat them like children.
Yeah. No, they definitely don't. And I think that the idea that they acknowledge the intention behind good or bad behavior, I think that gives me a lot of respect for the clauses. That it's not just like, you know, you yelled at your sister, you were on the naughty list. It's like, oh, you interpreted the thing that your sister did as very hurtful to you, and then you lashed out at her. But I know you've, it's like, but you've been trying to control your, like, emotions, you know, so you're still on the nice list, even if you slip up. It's kind of like this whole master thing of, like, you have to be really, it's almost like the opposite of the good place. You know, it's like, you have to be really bad to get on the naughty list for Santa.
You're innocent until proven guilty.
Exactly. And, but I was just thinking about that a lot because I'm sure that Anne got so much judgment for leaving her children.
My God, yes.
And I'm sure that, like, I mean, her 3-year-old children were, like, fine with staying with grandma. And I'm sure they're so proud of their mom for becoming the person that she was. And I'm sure as adults, if you were to ask them, like, would you wish your mom wouldn't have left you for those couple months? They'd be like, absolutely not.
They don't,
like,
fucking remember that.
They don't remember it. And it also, like, they can see the change that happened in her.
Right.
Like, I would love to know what her children think of it now.
I mean, people judge women who go to work. They yep. judge women that stay home from work. They yep. judge women that don't want children, can't have to. It's like, it doesn't matter what you do. You're being judged for your child decisions. And I'm sure your children don't judge you that way.
Yeah.
I never look at my mother and I'm like, oh, I didn't like it when she did this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. Like, in terms of her career and her friends and, like, yeah. her life, I was always like, oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Go do that.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in the allure of the North Pole.
I know.
The idea of, like, okay, it's an expedition to get there, but it is so remote that it has become this make-believe land mm-hmm. that the most powerful person on Earth can live in. You know what I mean?
Well, and also, like, I never thought about, like, yeah, like, he does, like, live at the exact point of all of the time zones.
Yeah.
So he can be in, like, Christmas for Santa Claus, as if he's a real person.
He's real.
It's not just 24 hours for him, you know, because he is in yesterday and today all at the same time. Because he's literally at the 90-degree North Pole. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really fun. And I just also was, like, really struck by just, like, the magic of both of these journeys. Where one is something that, like, is obviously a fairy tale that's been passed down through tradition. And the other is a real thing that happened that sounds so unbelievable. And the idea of, like, not a lot of people know about, like, Mrs. Claus and her story. And not a lot of people know about this female expedition. And not a lot of people know about Anne Daniels. Her Wikipedia page is, like, 5 sentences long.
Yeah. And I like the idea of Anne Daniels kind of being Mrs. Claus.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know how there's so many stories about, like, the guy who became Santa?
Yes.
It's like, what is the story of the woman who became Mrs. Claus? Like, there should be a story becoming Mrs. Claus. Anne Daniels yeah. became Mrs. Claus. She is the most decorated. She's been to both Arctic poles. And she's decorated in the art of the cold.
She, like, knows how to read the sun and tell where she's going to go. I can't even read a face clock watch. Like, it's truly
why does 8 mean 40?
I don't know.
It is I think the idea of becoming Mrs. Claus is something we need. An origin story.
Oh, absolutely.
We keep having Santa Claus origin stories and we need a Mrs. Claus origin story.
Yes, really, because again, like, not, I feel like there's not enough about, like, who Mrs. Claus is as a person. All we know about her is that she was a wife, and that is her main identity. And I feel like that's all we know about Anne and these other women. It's like, oh, they are women. And like Anne is divorced. So it's kind of like Mrs. Claus is a wife. Anne is now not a wife. And I also like she kind of but Anne left her wife identity to go do the thing that she needed to do. And yeah. Mrs. Claus is only herself through her wife identity because she's a fictional character. Mm-hmm.
I mean, Anne could have picked any number of things to do.
Yeah.
This was the one she saw on a newspaper in front of her.
Yeah.
So I think she was a searcher and mm-hmm. she found something. So mm-hmm. by nature, she was somebody who was going to search and find.
Yeah, I agree. And I also wonder, like, I didn't know that. I didn't come across this in any of the research because there's like nothing on her. But like, was Anne Daniels her married name? And now is she like constantly reminded of?
I'm sure.
Like her ex-husband? Like
probably if she didn't. Yeah, probably.
Like that kind of sucks because like all of the original news articles said Anne Daniels and she was married at the time. And it was a time where like you normally would take her husband's name. So I wonder like
a lot of women kind of been stuck with it. Don't change their name if they already had kids because they don't want to have to be separate from their children.
Oh, that makes sense.
You know what I mean? Because then it's like, oh, anytime you email the school, I have this happen with moms all the time. They'll be like, I'm Carolyn Smith, Charlie's mom. Because if you have a different last name,
oh yeah,
then it's so hard to like you're not a set anymore. Mm-hmm. You're now separate families. It's weird. It's like you're an ace of spades and you're an ace of diamonds. So I can't group you together.
Oh, that makes sense. I was also thinking about your idea of Mrs. Claus keeping the books and like being in charge of all this like administrative work, like behind the scenes. Versus like these women who are literally just going out and doing the legwork.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's really cool.
But also the guide women are kind of like the bookkeepers, right?
They are.
You had these two women who were like, they had to travel the entire journey and they were doing the legwork and keeping the books.
Yeah.
Which is more true, I think, to Mrs. Claus's story.
Yeah. That she's definitely doing so much fucking work.
Oh, she's a manager.
Yeah.
She's managerial staff for sure.
Manager, executive in charge.
She owns 51% of the stock shares. No doubt.
And then just the idea of like domesticity versus adventure and how like Mrs. Claus definitely has adventures, but nobody gives her credit for those adventures.
No.
And these women who trek to the North Pole definitely get domestic. Get their fucking domesticity on and don't get credit for it.
I mean, they chiseled through ice for a shoe.
A shoe! A shoe and a ski.
They said, you're not taking my shoe.
Maybe a tea kettle. I don't know what they lost exactly, but
it just seems really dramatic.
Yep. Oh my gosh.
In the best way.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's such. I was on pins and needles. Like I'm sad we didn't record. We should start like leaving Zoom on in the background to record us because I was literally covering my mouth. I was breathing so hard. I was like, I don't want to breathe into the mic. I was sure someone was gonna die.
That's what you think the whole time. That's why I like. And it's funny because every time I prep for an episode, I do this. By the end of it, I'm like, well, I'm sure she knows. Like, I think of things as common facts that aren't. Uh-huh. It's like I'm saying, and then her foot broke through the ice as if it were like, and the sky and was like, blue. Ugh! And I was like, what the fuck? And I'm like, oh, that's right. She hasn't heard this part before. Her foot broke through the ice.
Well, when you spend a week researching something and you read the same fact on 100 web pages, mm-hmm. you're like, oh, everybody knows this. But the truth is, I had never heard about those women.
It's amazing. And they, like, a lot of them almost died. And it's amazing. And then, I don't know. I just think it's so fucking cool that, like, I'm going to make another comparison. Like Mrs. Claus, Mrs. Claus ran with her new position as Mrs. Claus and just made it better and has been continuously making it better mm-hmm. since she existed as a character. And you think about Anne Daniels was like, all right, I'm a polar explorer. I did this many miles on the polar ice. in 1997, and now I'm going to go back and I'm going to do a bunch more ice. And it's like, I'm going to take this new identity that I have and I'm going to fucking run with it.
The best comparison I have.
Uh-huh.
You know, like the woman who marries a person who like does crazy holiday decorations, like one of those houses with a million lights.
Absolutely.
And you're like, shit, I married into something. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Claus literally married into someone with 12 flying reindeer and works one day a year.
That's pretty good to me.
That's insane.
That's wild.
But, I mean, how much stress is on that your whole life to make sure that one day is perfect, the same way that a trip to the North Pole would be? Yep. If you fail,
oh my gosh, yeah,
you're the woman journey that failed. You can't fuck up Christmas.
That is such a good point about being the woman that didn't fail. Because Mrs. Claus has to be an efficient woman for literally all the children in the world to be happy. And the women who trekked to the North Pole had to be efficient women to not, I don't want to say like, they had to not like let down all the women and men who were looking and others who were looking at them as like, wow, I didn't think that I could do the North Pole, but you did the North Pole. It's like, yeah, exactly how I felt when I was fucking 15 years old and I saw a documentary on climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. And I was like, that 80-year-old woman climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. I could totally do that. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I haven't. I probably won't. But I could. I feel like I could.
Yeah.
Like,
you line up for a marathon and you see how many people in their 60s are next to you. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
I now know.
Yep.
I now know what I'm capable of.
Exactly.
But all the happiness in the world rides on Mrs. Claus, and it's like all of the confidence in the world rode on those women.
Yeah.
And it's like, so stupid. Them failing is like a big hunk of coal.
Yeah, it is.
For all the rest of the women.
And it's also so funny that you said all the happiness in the world, because that was literally a quote from one of the women. They're like, when you actually reach the North Pole and you're fucking done. And this is when they were on that, you know, trip where they did it all themselves, not in a relay. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you don't know what happiness feels like until you reach the North Pole after hiking
500 miles
across Arctic water and ice and snow. Like,
and possible polar bears.
Polar bears. Like, I just love that the North Pole, even though it's this fucking desolate wasteland in reality, still holds true happiness for people the way that it does in fantasy.
Mm.
Did you like that poetic stanza I just gave?
Let's write the next great poem that will be referenced 200 years from now about Miss Claus.
It's going to be great. And that's
her name will be
into a movie.
You ready to toast?
I am ready to toast.
I am too.
Who would you like to toast this evening?
So tonight I want to toast to every woman. You who goes to work all day and then tends to the house and children and all evening with limited appreciation. I want you to know that I see you. I know you're the reason that those presents are under the tree today. Mm. I know that you stayed up late and moved that stupid fucking elf. I know that you're the reason all the kids are smiling and you listened and made sure that they got exactly what they wanted, even when they didn't know that they wanted it. And that is why I believe in Mrs. Claus. Mm. And the fact that she can't have a name because she's you. So to you, Mrs. Claus, Merry Christmas.
So I would like to toast the bold women of this world who make the decision to change their life no matter their age. Because I think that it is the common belief among people that, like, you go to school, you go to college, you pick a major, you pick a career, and then you stay that way your entire life. Anne was literally a 35-year-old mother who worked at a bank and became one of the most knowledgeable polar ice explorers literally on the planet.
Hell yeah, hell yeah.
I just think that people think they can't change their career later on in life, and you absolutely can. Is it going to be difficult? Yeah. not always. Maybe it won't be. Maybe it'll be awesome. I don't know. But
maybe you'll fall into some ice water.
Stuck. Maybe you'll fall into some ice water and almost get eaten by a polar bear. I don't know. But I just want to toast them because I think the bold women who decide to change their situation are fucking amazing. So cheers to them.
Serious cheers. That's so brave.
All right. What are you enjoying in pop culture this week?
So my little librarian sister promoted a book for me.
Okay, what is it?
That was a sentence that didn't come out right. So the book is called The Extra Woman by Joanna Scutts, S-C-U-T-T-S. And it is so cool. She told me to read it because it's about a generation of women who lived alone, starting like pre-World War II. And in that era, the famous self-help book writer was Marjorie Hillis. And the book is about Marjorie Hillis and the self-help books that she wrote for these women called, the first one was Live Alone and Like It. And then like, yeah, they like continue to like move through like her history in having to tackle this issue of like, I'm an extra woman. I'm not a part of any couple.
Yes. Well, it's so funny because I love that title, Live Alone and Like It, because I live by the mantra, lunch alone and like it.
You should.
Because I fucking love having lunch by myself.
Good.
And I feel like people need to be more comfortable with that.
Be more bold with it.
Be more bold.
Go with to your the Arctic lunch. With your lunch.
Go to Panera Bread. They have outlets under every seat.
Yes, they do. So, I don't know. It's cool. Just for this one woman to be writing about another woman who wrote all these self-help books. She was like, I think my sister said, she was like, I think you and Katie would really enjoy it because it is legitimately just one woman writing about another woman who was writing to women. So like, it's like your cup of tea.
I love it.
And I was like, thanks. And then I immediately got it on
audibletrials.com/tertiary. I felt like we're Chris and Wig and Fred Armisen from SNL.
I mean, if that's how you feel about us, that's a really good compliment.
That's really nice.
What are you going to promo?
I am going to promo a documentary that I could not get out of my head this week when I was researching this. Obviously, it's called Chasing Vertical Ice. Limits.
Chasing Ice.
So this documentary I saw when I was in college and I could not believe it. So basically this guy, James Balog, he saw firsthand because he's a polar ice motherfucker. He was like, the ice caps are melting, everyone. And everyone was like, yeah, sure. So it's him literally setting up cameras around the Arctic ice caps and filming them melt. And
wait, Al Gore?
Yes. I'm sure he donated some money to the cause. So he is literally putting up these cameras and like the cameras fail and the cameras freeze and the cameras do this and they do that. And like, it is so frustrating watching this documentary because you're like, oh my gosh, I just want you to get what you want. But like all these problems go in the way. And then he finally gets it. And it's like he shows people. He's like, look, here's a video of this giant 10,000 year ice thing melting in front of me. Here is where they were this year. Here's where they are now. Here's how much they melted. Here's how much excess water came into the oceans and caused that fucking flood here and there. And people are still like, I don't think so. And it's like these hard facts of like, look where the polar ice caps were and look at where they are now. And it's like incredibly impactful. And I would really recommend it. Also, it's just beautiful seeing all of this ice and like shit. I don't know. Like, it's just really pretty. But Chasing Ice, James Balog, it's amazing and it's important.
It is.
There we go. So I think that's it.
Merry Christmas to all.
Merry Christmas. We hope you have a great holiday. You know what would be the best Christmas present for us? Is if you shared this podcast.
Or if you liked and rated someone. And review us.
Or if you liked and rated and review us. That would be amazing.
We are Patreon. So here's the deal with Patreon. It's there. And if you go on before February, February is going to be like the cutoff date for this. We're going to send out like bingo boards and like the first wave. Like if you get on after February, that's fine too. But yeah, like our first wave of like bingo boards and stickers, that's when we're going to email them or send them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to get on and put your address in and like get all signed up. Otherwise, we won't know where to send them to.
Exactly.
Because I'm not Mrs. Claus. We're not. I don't know where your house is.
We don't know.
And then also, we just started Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So we now, it's a lot of the same things, but it's just good to have a community. I think Facebook is really good at the discussion portion. So mm-hmm. we'll just hopefully have a lot more people talking and giving suggestions. So we are all in. We can pose more questions on Facebook if that's what you'd like, mm-hmm. but totally there for it. So you can now find us on that social media as well. So if you already are following us on Instagram and Twitter, Instagram at Her Story on the Rocks, Twitter at Her Story R, Facebook, Her Story on the Rocks, come on over, meet us there. We're here for it.
And as we like to say on Her Story on the Rocks, well-behaved women
are never caught kissing Santa Claus
underneath the mistletoe
that night.
And they rarely make history.
Ever.
Goodbye.
Bye.
'Listening to Her Story on the Rocks. We are independently produced by 1986 Entertainment and proudly recorded in Baltimore, Maryland. If there's a woman in history you would like us to cover, you can email us at herstoryontherocks@gmail.com. You can also message us on Twitter or Instagram. We post all of our cocktail recipes on Tuesdays so that you can go get all the supplies you need and drink along with us. See you next week. Bye.